going to open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Today is February 26, 2009. It's 5:34. And we're going to open a public hearing on the state of hunting. I also need to do one piece of committee business first that most of you won't understand or care about, but we just kind of got to do a little bit of business here. I need to notify that we are going to introduce some committee measures, and I'm looking for a motion from my vice chair.
Mr. Chair, I move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 3123, dated 2-9 of 2009. LC 3507, dated 2-16 of 2009. LC 2713, dated 2-23 of 2009. LC 3445, dated 2-24 of 2009. LC 3514, dated 2-16 of 2009. LC 2529, dated 1-29 of 2009. And LC 2791, dated 2-16 of 2009.
Representative Krieger moves that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 3123, LC 3507, LC 2713, LC 3445, LC 3514, LC 2526, LC 2791. By the way, we are in a work session. I didn't note that. Let me just say, these don't mean you support any of these. This is just committee bills that various people and myself have asked to be introduced. A yes vote doesn't encumber you on it in any manner, in any way. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Wingard.
I'm 10 seconds in to looking at these. Can you help me out with LC 3514 and 2526? Is there an ag natural resources connection to these bills?
Representative Krieger, do you want to maybe, we talked
there
about
this. There doesn't have to be. Yeah. They get assigned to a particular committee because when they all come in at the end, they're not always relative to the committee you got, and they could be sent from here, referred to another committee at a later date.
So these, we don't expect
not all
these two bills to come back.
No.
Yeah, I know this is confusing. I should have caught you earlier. Apparently,
often don't see a human services bill in ag natural resources, so it kind of threw me.
Yeah, for example, we're introducing one of these for seeing a Squire's client. It's not going to come here. It's just a courtesy. It'll be referred somewhere else.
I thought that as a committee bill, it needed to be relevant to the topic. So that's fine.
I agree.
I got no problems.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? There's no objection, then the measures are introduced as committee bills.
Hit the gavel.
Great. So I want to have just a couple of quick housekeeping pieces. I have a bunch of witness lists. I'm not totally clear if everyone knew that if you signed up, it means I'm going to call you up here to talk. If you signed up and it just means you want to be supportive, you can just kind of wave at me, no, I don't want to talk. But the list is kind of who I'll call up to talk. We are going to try and keep the testimony 3 to 5 minutes because a lot of people in overflow room. I'm willing to stay. Not all my committee members can, but I'm willing to stay until everyone's talked. My wife will wonder about where I'm at, and if my phone rings, I might do something about that, but that's what I've got set up for the moment. And when you do come up to testify, you might hear this really weird crackling and buzzing if you haven't shut your cell phone off before you get up here. So you might shut your cell phone off before you come. We are going to, we have a protocol in the building that if we have a representative or senator who would like to come up and testify, and I've asked one of my colleagues to come and talk just for a moment, and he's going to come, then we are going to have the agency talk for a couple minutes. Then we're going to have our youth hunters come and talk, because I know at least some of them have to go do homework, from what I understand, from one of their dads. And then we're going to go down the list, and we're going to hear from everybody who wants to talk about the state of our sport. So, with that, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for conducting this hearing today. I think it's an important topic that's not discussed enough. either in policy committees or in the Ways and Means committees. Hunting, as many of you know, is a family tradition, and it's an important family tradition to many of us serving in the legislature. And somewhere along the way, it seems as though that tradition has suffered. Some folks would point to increased urbanization, and perhaps people are a little bit less in touch with the land that perhaps provided them their sustenance prior. Other people would point to decreased access to hunting opportunities, increased license fees, decreased herd numbers. I mean, the reasons go on and on. And I've spent quite a bit of time talking with folks about this, just generally with constituents and, frankly, in hunting camp. It's a topic every year. Personally, I deer hunt and I pheasant hunt. And I go deer hunting with my grandpa every year over in the Fort Rock unit due east of Chemult. And every year this topic comes up, between cribbage hands. And everybody has a theory, particularly with declining herd numbers, or at least a perception of declining herd numbers. And I got to say, I was over there a few years ago, and it was on the last day there that I saw three does. It wasn't just that I didn't see horns, I didn't see any animals, period, the entire time I was over there. But I came to this tradition as a child growing up in Bandon. My dad was our Weeblo Scout leader, and he organized a local a hunter safety course for all of us when we were in Weeblo Scouts. And, in Bandon, everybody in the scout troop participated. And, that's just what you did come that time of year, opening day. A lot of families took their kids out of school, and they went and they camped for a week or more around opening day. And you just don't see as much of that anymore. But back to there are so many issues that we could touch on, but I'm interested in getting to the bottom of declining herd numbers, and so I will focus kind of my thoughts around that and just share with you what people have told me, because everybody does have a theory. Some people have said have claimed that disease have thinned herds. Some folks have claimed that a decline in logging on federal forest lands has left less open browse adjacent to cover, and that's actually been detrimental to herd numbers. Some folks have claimed that that bag limits have been poorly managed in relationship to the number of hunters, and it's left us all with a really thin soup. And then others insist that it's the burgeoning cougar population that's just simply taking its toll. I'm not a biologist. I don't know which, if any, of these is reality. Perhaps it's some of each. Perhaps it's none. I don't know. But I'm simply here to say that I think that it's important that we have this conversation in this building. And it's an appropriate time to do so. I know that we won't get to the bottom of it and be able to fix everything by next deer season. And I look forward to being able to spend that with my grandpa. This last year was the first year that he was not able to go for health reasons. But it's an important tradition in our family. And when I talked to him a few weeks ago, he plans his year around opening day, and he was talking in high hopes and in an upbeat spirit about he believes that he will be in good enough health to go again next year, and I really hope so. I don't think we'll probably have solved the world's problems or have gotten to the bottom of the declining herd numbers or have turned that around by then, but I do hope, though, to keep this tradition viable, you know, for the next generation, so that, you know, we can pass it on to our kids, and that they can experience the same valuable tradition that we've experienced growing up. And so I will leave it at that, and sincerest gratitude and thanks to you, Mr. Chair, for conducting this hearing. So,
thank you, Representative Edwards.
What I'm going to do, just because I know my committee has opinions on things and we all have a little bit of background, I thought maybe we'll just quickly go down, introduce ourselves briefly. Then, if you try and talk during the hearing, I won't let you.
It'll be great.
So, I know I'm staring right at you, Representative Gilliam, the whole time I'm talking, aren't I? But I'll just start and get mine out of the way quickly, because Chris said most of what I wanted to say. Essentially, the reason I wanted to have you here, I was sitting in deer camp, just like he said, last September, Beulah Unit, right outside of Unity with my dad, and we were, as usual, espousing our theories, and by day, I was only able to get out there for like 3 days, and after he was there for, you know, I think 10 or 12, and no one in my party got a deer. They've been going there 50 years. No one got a deer this year. It apparently got very heated as to why exactly we're having some of the problems we're having by the time I left. So I'm sort of glad I wasn't there, actually, because if usually someone will shove someone else, and, you know, it gets a little dicey. So I thought, you know, if I ever get a chance, because I wasn't chair of this committee, I was going to have to talk to my former chair and my former high school principal about letting me do this, but luckily I got one of these, so now I can hold this hearing. I was just not going to have any bills or anything. I was just going to have a hearing. And anybody who wants to come and talk about what's going on with the sport that we all love should just come and give us the theories. Then we'll make a list and look for patterns and see what we can't do to solve these problems, what policies are in place, what we need to do, a to-do list for us. So going from that 3 months ago to seeing you all here, knowing there's another room, is just a fantastic thing. I thank you for coming. We will listen. We will take action. And that's why I'm involved. I've been doing this with my family my whole life. I have a one-year-old daughter. I can't wait till she hits the age for a youth mentor hunting opportunity. And I want to thank you for doing it. So anybody? Yeah, Representative Roblin.
I'll just say, I mean, for me, having been a high school principal in a rural area in Coos Bay, it used to be difficult at times in opening season to get our football team all there.
That's right.
So it was difficult deals. You really had to crack down. If you're going to be on the varsity, you don't go hunting this season. I mean, they were big discussions that took place. And growing up in Port Angeles, Washington, up in the Olympic Peninsula, the outdoors has always been a really important thing to me. And in Coos Bay, most of the time I was there, we had hunter safety classes in all the schools in the evenings, and we had, you know, different hunter safety classes in the schools themselves for a long time. And I have always been a believer that if you want things to be handled and done safely, education is the answer for that. Train people, teach them, they handle stuff correctly, they take care of it. It's also been a belief of mine that most of our wildlife that we have in the state, when Fish and Wildlife gets up and talk about it, they can, but it's really the hunters and the fishermen and whatever that maintain it. I mean, that's where their fees are what's there, actually. And I want to make sure that people understand clearly that I have friends that are environmentalists and others, and I appreciate what they care about and what they're doing, but they aren't helping the situation when it comes to making sure that the wildlife and others have the habitat they need. And they need to talk to people who go out there and spend a lot of time and really care about it, because they care about the habitat too, because it is really important to them. And it's important to them in a totally different way. And I think they get misunderstood a lot of times, and that's frustrating to me, because truly they have been the activists with respect to trying to make sure that the environment is a place that all of us can take advantage of. And as we urbanize and fence off places and make it more and more difficult for people to have access to places, and it gets harder and harder, people just aren't willing to put up with the things they have to, and it drifts away, and we don't do it any longer. And it frustrates me a lot, because there are lots of family histories and stories that are going to be lost in our communities if we don't recognize that there is this culture in our state and in our nation that really do care about the lands we have, and especially the state lands, which we have a bill that talks about no loss of hunting room. And so, I mean, it's all of that kind of stuff that we really need to do. And I was really happy last session as the chair of this committee to start the New Hunters Program for young people. I think that's a start to get going. But I'm hopeful that we're going to hear other ideas from you as the evening goes on that can help us maintain the culture that exists and the opportunities for families to do some things that are really healthy together, and I think this is one of those. So hopefully you're going to give us some other ideas that may lead to a better understanding for everybody in Oregon about this. And I just get frustrated with how few people now have a connection to this culture that used to be just everybody. It was part of your life. So
we got a group that's going to help
us. I was concerned about predation as another reason for that we don't have the stocks. I worry about my friend here and his efforts to...
Let's hear from your friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I won't even say what he
hear from
what he encourages
too,
people to do. But
Representative Gilliam, would you in chime in?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one shot. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You got about 2 minutes, too.
No, I'm going to go much faster than that. 1966, I moved here with my family. I was 13 years old. My dad is not a hunter. We came by way of I-5 from California, and I got to see lots of Portland in the summertime. But in the fall of 1966, a guy by the name of Lloyd Sawyer, who also had a 13-year-old son, I was 13, said I was going hunting with the family. And we left on a Friday night, and by the time we got to Enterprise, it was pitch dark. And we made camp, and we got up way before dawn, which is not my style. And we walked in the dark, and I stumbled over many things. I didn't carry a gun this time. I didn't carry a gun until the next season, and then I'm not going to tell you how many seasons until I actually got a deer, but... I shall never forget the sunrise coming up over the High Wallowas, and I realized I really was in Oregon and how beautiful this state is. It is an experience I will never forget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Schoffler, House District 48, Happy Valley, out of southeast Portland. I'm an urban Democrat, but I grew up in Iowa, and our Uncle Bill taught my siblings and I all how to shoot a gun. When we were 10 years old, including our little sister, grew up hunting and fishing in the Midwest. I still love to go fishing as much as I get to. And, Mr. Chair, every family in Oregon took their children out of the school on opening day for a week. We could save some money on the education budget.
Just do that. Representative Krieger, you're going to like this one.
It'd be no good. They may not like it. I have all of Curry County, about 70% of Coos County and Western Douglas from Winston-Dillard West. You don't know where life is going to take you. Killed my first deer when I was 10 years old. July, that's when they're best, you know. And it was on the road going into the drive-in theater at Gearhart. My mother was not happy when I told her what I'd done. And my father, when he came home, he thought it was great, you know, the heritage that he'd had. Because hunting was our heritage. But you don't know where life's going to take you. In 1964, I joined the Oregon State Police Game Division for 28 years. So I'm the only game enforcement officer that's pinched half his constituents, but yet I still get their vote. So, but our hunting, our fishing, our rural way of life, those families that go out in the woods, you know, the experiences that you have there, they live with you. And we want to be able to provide that for more young Oregonians. And I see that slipping away. So I really want to hear what you have to tell us and what you have to say and how you feel about our management of our resources.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about my experience hunting and fishing, and they're pretty limited. I grew up in rural Wisconsin on the Mississippi, and so, of course, I did some fishing, but not very much. And everybody hunted in my area because they needed it for food. And so I'm used to people who are hunting. My father was a hunter. And, in fact, my father moved us to Klamath Falls because he'd heard from his friends in the Army Air Corps that Klamath Falls was good for hunting and fishing.
Is that right?
That's right. So that's how I ended up in Klamath Falls. And So I was never invited to go fishing. I was never invited to go hunting. So it didn't bother me because I was busy doing so many other things. So I've grown up around it. So I am the anomaly here because I really haven't done it. But I'm not averse to it. And I certainly know a lot of people need to do it to eat.
Mr. Wingard.
I'm Representative Matt Wingard, and I represent House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, Bull Mountain, all good hunting areas, by the way, and rural Washington County out to Gaston, and it includes Hag Lake.
A lot of possum in his area.
I am a third-generation Oregonian. I grew up in Beaverton at Aloha, and had grandparents in Eugene. They had a cabin. We had a family cabin for many decades on the Mackenzie River, and that's where I spent countless hours fishing unsuccessfully on the Mackenzie River. But it never mattered to me. I actually don't particularly enjoy eating fish, so it was much more fun to me to simply enjoy the fishing. And if I did occasionally, on accident, unintentionally, catch a fish, then, it was enough just to stare it in the eye and tell him who was boss and let him go. If I had actually enjoyed eating fish, he would have been dinner. So.
That's right. Sarah Beyer?
Yes. Representative Terry Beyer, I represent the community of Springfield, and I don't have a long history of hunting or any history, really. My father hunted when I was very young, but the closest thing I've ever gotten to hunting was looking for a bargain in the local department store. So, but I do live in a community where this is a very important part of their lives, and I do understand the value of hunting in our wildlife management. And I want to thank everybody that's here for the part they're doing in helping us accomplish that.
So I realize that I neglected to even say my name or anything where I represent. I was talking about hunting camp. I'm Brian Clem. I'm from Salem. I'm a representative from Salem. I grew up in Coos Bay. It's where my dad also grew up. My family's been in Oregon since 1850. I'm sure there's been a lot of hunting in all those years with all of us. My dad was going to come tonight, actually, and he called me yesterday, and he's also a big fisherman, lives on the Umpqua River. He moved there after delivering mail for 42 years in Coos Bay. It's his dream home, and he said, the water's coming up, and I'm worried about my steelhead camp, and I'm going to have to move all of my picnic tables, the firing. I can't come. So I tried to teach him how to use the Internet, so maybe he's listening. I don't know. I hope you got the stuff moved because I wanted to go fishing this weekend. But he's not here, hunting's just been a very big part of my family's life. And when I go door-to-door in my district, particularly in East Salem, there's always somebody washing out a cooler with the truck in the driveway in the fall, and there's no politics talk. It's just about how the season was, and so I know I have a lot of hunters in my district because I see them just when they're getting back washing off the trucks and washing out the coolers.
So, ma'am, I didn't do that either. May I do that? Introduce myself. What's that? In my district?
Representative Van Orman did not tell you who she is or where she's from either.
That's right. I'm Suzanne Van Orman, and I represent Hood River County, Clackamas County around Mount Hood and the village of Welches and Sandy, and then Corbett in Multnomah County. And I do want to say my father did fish in Crater Lake.
Hunting and fishing are different. I will tell you that. So I don't have on my sheet who are the youth and who are not who want to speak. So if you are youth, let's just define that. How about if you're 18 and under and you want to talk, raise your hand so I get a sense of how many there are.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
Are you in the agency?
What's that? I am. I'm just trying to get a sense of how many I've got. Okay.
Oh,
yeah,
there's one.
Great.
There.
One, two. Yeah, thanks, Rich. Three. Okay.
What about the other rooms?
And if you're in the other room and you're under 18, you want to talk and you got homework, come on over to this room. We're going to have the agency go, and then I'm going to have you all come up right after that. So with that, you three get ready, and I'm going to have the agency come up and talk for a few minutes, just about a couple statistics, and then we're going to get into it. So please. This is ODF&W.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher. I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. First, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for scheduling this this hearing, particularly in the evening, so I know all these folks could come, and appreciate all the folks who did come and take time out of their busy days to join us this evening. The department appreciates that. As you can see, we have a very dedicated and passionate constituency, which you're going to hear from here later, and that's certainly one of our real strong points. We have prepared some lengthy testimony. I'm going to turn this over to Roger Furman, our Information Education Director, as well as Ron Anglin, our Wildlife Division Administrator, to just hit the high points and not take up a lot of the committee's time here this evening. We'll hit the high points and then be out of the way for the folks behind us. Also, additionally, our Commission Chair, Marla Ray, did join us here as well. I think she's in the overflow room.
Great. So, hi, Marla.
So with that, I'd like to turn it over to the staff here.
All right.
Thank
Good
you.
Evening, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. You should have copies of our testimony, and there's a couple of things I'd like to touch on very briefly. On the first page, there's a figure that shows national hunting trends and participation. That the numbers of hunters actually peaked in the United States back in 1982 with around 16 million hunters. And the Oregon trends found on page 2 of the testimony are very similar. We peaked at some fairly high numbers back in the mid to late 80s at around 350,000 hunters. And since that time, we've been following the same kind of national trend of a decline. And today we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 280,000 people that hunt every year. Some of the research that's been done nationally looking at why people are not participating anymore, conducted by the National Shooting Sports Foundation, has found that the most common response has been lack of free time. And then other things that play into that are family and work obligations, lack of access, loss of places to hunt, no one to hunt with. We're seeing that more and more as people age, that they lose their hunting partners and they don't have anybody to hunt with. And then in some cases, the costs associated with hunting today. The department has really tried to take some steps to try and address some of that. We've done some things, especially for youth, to streamline the hunter education program and try and make it easier for kids to go through that program and not go through a lengthy class session. They can do things online. You know, we worked very closely with the committee last year to get the Mentored Youth Hunting Program passed and enacted. We've got now about 3,400 kids that are participating in that during the 2007 or since 2007. We offer youth clinics and have really tried to reach out to the kids. This year, during as part of our fee proposal, we have a fairly comprehensive package that would reduce fees for kids to participate that comes at a revenue loss to us, but we feel that that's a very significant thing to do to hopefully increase participation, and we feel that it's worthwhile to do it, that we can wrap it into this kind of a fee proposal at this point in time. We also recognize that there's problems with adult participation. Again, it goes back to lack of places to hunt, where to go, don't have the time to go out and scout anymore. We now have a Google-based web mapping system on our website that people can participate in. It shows all of our wildlife management areas, most of our access and habitat program lands that are enrolled in the program through the surcharge that's on the hunter's licenses. So we're really trying to do some things that would highlight where people can go. And all of this, you know, it's not just about hunting. It also, you know, hunting is a fairly significant economic driver within this state. And as we reported to you earlier, we've been in the process of collecting some information on that, and I'll turn it over to Roger now to provide you with that information.
Chair Clem, my name is Roger Furman, the Information Education Division Administrator. As you can see from the room and the overflow room, hunting as well as fishing, wildlife viewing, clamming, crabbing are very important to Oregonians. We spend a lot of time outdoors. We spend a lot of money when we're doing it. We recently completed some work with Travel Oregon to look at the economic expenditures and just how much people are spent on hunting, fishing, wildlife viewing, and shellfish activities. We had more than 11,000 people respond, hunters, anglers, residents, non-residents, to supply information and give us detailed information about the trips that they took, how they spent their money, how many people went on their trip, how far they traveled, where they went, what species they were pursuing. We're just getting the preliminary results from that. We expect the final report in a couple of weeks, but I wanted to share with you some of that preliminary information because I think it will bear in some of the discussions that we have down the road on this important topic.
Briefly,
I will. I'll just hit the highlights on this. In 2008, according to the study, hunters and anglers and others spent about $1 billion on trips for hunting, fishing, wildlife viewing, shellfish.
One billion
with a B.
Oregon,
yes.
Hunters.
Oregon. This is residents and non-residents spent $1 billion in Oregon on trips associated with hunting and fishing. We've broken down in this report into two types of categories. Travel, which is when people travel more than 50 miles or spend an overnight on a trip, or local, where they hunt within their local area. And that $1 billion represents all of that travel and local numbers. And I'm going to talk mostly about the chart on the top of page 5, which is the travel-generated expenditures. And the reason why I want to focus on that one is that's money that comes into the communities from outside the area. Someone may come from the Willamette Valley, go to eastern Oregon and hunt or recreate, and that money essentially moves from one part of the state to the other. If you look at that, more than half of that money went from wildlife viewing, but a good portion of it, about 10% of it, was from hunting. And they traveled across the state.
Here's what I think we're going to do.
Okay.
We're going to read this later. We may have you come back in and talk about it later.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who want to get this, we'll get it up on the website. It's got breakdowns by county. Just know there's $1 billion spent. There's different species people went and spent the money on, but we're just going to get into the folks.
Sure thing.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
So, my three 18 and under, as I defined them, youth, would you please come up? If there's more, come stand over here. But I know I got it. Please. Cheryl, I think it is.
Go right,
so,
up, right
and
up there.
We just have
go
a
right
seat
up, take
here.
A seat up there.
She doesn't have schoolwork tonight.
Okay, so we'll have you go after these. Okay, great. And then just so you know, the next group will be anybody who came from more than 100 miles to get sort of next dibs here at the Oregon Legislature. All right. But we'll get her right after these here. So, and this is for everybody, but before you start talking, we sort of got a rule so the nice man over here can record who you are for people listening. Just your name and where you're from, and then tell us whatever you want to tell us. So why don't you start?
Well, hello, members of the committee, and thank you for inviting me today. My name is Jeremy Abendroth. I live at 314 Southeast 202nd Avenue in Portland, Oregon. I'm a hunter and Oregon Hunters Association member and a Buck Gardner College Junior Pro staffer. I would like to tell you what hunting means to me. I've been hunting for over 4 years, and I love doing it. Hunting is a big part of my life because I enjoy being in the great outdoors and having lots of good times with my friends and family. Hunting has helped me learn about survival skills, different species of animals, and how they live in their environment. Hunting has also helped me with my career plan by making me want to go to college and learn how to be a wildlife biologist. It's also kept me physically fit while I have fun doing it. So thank you for supporting hunting, and please continue to support hunting for the future and for future generations to come. Thank you.
Good thank job. You, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Hi there.
My name is Gregor Engstrom, and I'm from Southeast Salem, Oregon, Pudding Creek Drive, 78031. Let's see.
What was the name of your...
Salem?
Salem,
yeah.
Thank you.
And I was told just to say one of my...
Say whatever you want, Gregor. we know your dad well around here. You say whatever you want, we'll deal with him later.
He's always telling us what to say, too, Gregor.
Yeah.
So, he told me to tell a story about my first band, and it was a cold day, and maybe about 3 degrees, and we were out hunting on the Columbia. Everything was frozen with ice around it, and he told me to go jump shoot because it was kind of slow at that point. And so he came with me, and we went down, down a little ways because we'd seen some duck slalom landing beneath us. And so we went down there, and he kept me in front of him, and we were quiet. And we got down there and told me to line up two ducks, and so I didn't, but I just shot one. And then they all started flying up, so I shot another, and then I stepped to the side so my dad could take two down. And we went out to the water to pick them up, and we picked them up, and we got four in all, and so we headed back up the hill, and we were going to go down further and keep on trying to get more, because it was kind of slow right then. And he kept asking me, so which two do you think you shot? And I said, I shot this one and that one, and I'm positive. And he asked me that over and over. We kept going down, but we didn't get any after that. So we came back up, and on our way back up, we picked up the ducks, and we headed back down to the blind where we were hunting. And it was my job to count the ducks and make sure we didn't have over our limit or anything. So I counted, and I was looking at him, and I said, wait a minute, what's that? And I said, hey, that one's got a band, Dad. And he's like, oh, you just noticed? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, I shot that one. That's one I shot. So that's how I got my first band. And here's another one. There's this other place that they call the X. That's a little another blind. And so we went hunting there. And it was pretty good. Lots of ducks came in, and we shot quite a few. Place was littered pretty bad, so we picked it up. And let's see, that's pretty much it. But next year, I'm going to be hunting deer and elk, and so I'm kind of looking forward to that.
I recommend grouse at some point. I'm a deer and elk and grouse guy.
Hello, thank you for having us all here today. I'm Michael Miller. I'm 16, from here in Salem. I've grown up on archery. I was 2 or 3 years old in a playpen at an archery shop, and I've been shooting ever since I could stand. I've killed 3 turkeys and 1 deer. I killed my first black-tailed deer this last year on a rogue youth tag. I was pretty happy with it. Every time I go hunting out in the woods with my family, it's just a time of absolute peace and serenity with them. And when I get back home, it's sometimes kind of crazy. I've been fishing, caught my first fish with rod. I'm actually at North Salem High School in a health occupations, and after that, I hopefully go to college and be able to find time to have enough weekends to go hunting. Basically, I just wanted to say thank you for having us all here and letting us speak up.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Good job.
We're going to get you up here now, just in case. I set the rules, now I got to live by them, so that's the way this works. Thank you, guys. We're not going to do questions, because we got 60 people ready to talk. Yeah, sorry. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Let me predict. You're Cheryl Shaver?
Yep.
It helps when the name's on the shirt. It's great.
I'm 15. I'm from Prineville. I've been shooting since I was 2. I've hunted everything from ground squirrels, big game, upland birds, waterfowl. So I harvested my first elk last year.
Wow.
So jumped 2 bulls, not 100 yards from camp. So the other
That's
day.
Nice.
Hunting is a great tradition. America's pretty much known for letting its people practice their tradition, their heritage. Shooting and hunting is mine. I love to practice it. I got my first whitetail last year at the youth Malheur Baker Youth Doe Tag, and I harvested it with my muzzleloader. So, I'm part of a program called YHEC. It's Youth Hunter Education Challenge. Basically, it's a college course in hunter safety. There's 8 different events. You can take it to an international level. This year it's going to be held in New Mexico. I went last year, and I did very well there, and so did my team. The Oregon team, senior team, took first place last year. The junior team took 4th, and most of them never gone to nationals before. So we did very well. Thank you guys for letting me come up here and speak.
Thank you for
thank
coming.
You.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to go. Any more 18 and unders? All right. Now we're going to go into our 100 milers. So if I could get up Dale Ballard, Jim Morrell, and Bob Weber, we'll start there. After that, just to give some advance notice, we're going to have.
Chair Clement?
Yes.
I'll defer to somebody else. I don't have such a part of it.
Okay. So how about then Carl? Yeah, Prineville, that's a 100 miler. more than 100 miler. I know. I'm going over there Saturday. Great. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Morrell. I'm from Sisters. I came over today during the little snowstorm we had on the way. That's not unusual this time of year. My story is maybe a little different than some of the people that have been up here. I actually grew up in Alaska, and my father didn't hunt, but I was kind of surrounded by hunters, and so I had my own kind of bend, and when I got old enough to do it, I started hunting on my own. And I, during Vietnam, I entered the Navy, joined the Navy, and I couldn't decide if I wanted to make it a career or not, so I only stayed 33 years. So I retired in 2000, and after which I decided I wanted to get serious about this thing. So I actually was the state chairman of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation for a couple of years. Then I worked for Oregon Hunters Association for 3.5 years, and now I'm actually one of the three hunter representatives on the Access and Habitat Board. So I like to give back. Actually, I want to talk a little bit about the Access and Habitat Board. You probably already know it's a 7-member citizen board, and we provide oversight for the A&H program. There are 3 hunters, 3 land owners, and then the chairman, Steve McClellan, who is both a hunter and a landowner. We get a $2 annual surcharge on hunter's license from hunting license. We get allocations from the ODF&W Green Forage and Green Enhancement and Restoration programs, as well as we auction off and raffle off Oregon deer and elk tags. All the money comes from hunters and is used to benefit hunters. We provide grants primarily to private landowners, and the whole object of the program is to improve wildlife habitat and or increase public hunting access on private land. I just wanted to kind of briefly touch on some of the successes of the A&H program. Since the inception of the program in 1993, we've actually had 368 projects funded. Hunters have been allowed access to over 7 million acres of private land since 1993. During this biennium, hunters have gained access to 4.5 million acres of private land. The program is responsible for improving habitat on over 1 million acres of land since 1993. And presently, there are 76 active projects, including 23 new projects. And I just kind of want to make you, I do have a written testimony. I don't know if you want that or not, but I have it here.
Please. Yep, we'll get it, okay. And we'll get it to folks to read.
Okay. I'll give you that, and then I'll pass the baton to Bob.
Great. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Weber from Port Orford. I'm with the Oregon Hunters Association. Been in Oregon, except for being born outside the state, for my entire life. I did grow up in Tigard, and I would tell Representative Wingard that I have shot ducks on top of Bull Mountain. That was back in 1960.
Buy it now.
Well, it was a filbert orchard where we were hunting.
Yeah.
But I spent the last 40 years in southwest Oregon, the Medford area, and now in Port Orford. And hunting was a situation I got into sort of through a informal mentoring. Some high school classmates, parents took us along, and that's when I got started. I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about the landowner preference bills that are coming up. The Oregon Hunters Association has always been supportive of the landowner preference program. We've always felt that landowners ought to be able to hunt on their own property. I was involved in the Landowner Preference Review Committee with the department. We went through all the issues. I think one of the issues that came up was a definition of immediate family and whether or not they should include spouse. As the father of three daughters, I feel like you ought to be able to take your son-in-law along with you, because right now, grandpa can take his grandson, but his son-in-law can't go with him on without going through the transferability issue. And that's one correction that I think everybody was supporting. The Oregon Hunters Association did not support the addition of buck antelope to the landowner preference program. I think as it currently is situated, the landowners would be allotted 10% of the antelope tags now, which hasn't been the case in the past. We're also concerned about the transferability. We, in the Oregon Hunters Association, recognize the great contributions that the private landowners make to raising and supporting our wildlife. And we certainly feel that those who bear the economic burden of doing that should be compensated, and certainly in those cases, transferability of those tags is warranted. But we feel that there should be some connection between damage, that is the economic contribution, and the awarding of the transferability of tags. And so we would, I realize that at this moment in time, that would be a costly thing to do, to mandate ODFW to go through the and establish the damage situation. So I don't think that's something that's practical at this moment. But we'd certainly hope that down the road we could take a look at making damage a factor in determining transferability. And we certainly would. I think currently the law that is sunsetting allows about a third of the tags to be transferable. The bill suggests not less than half be transferable, and we would support keeping the third. And I'd certainly like to thank the committee for having this 100 day.
Thank you very much. Coach Carl.
Yeah, Coach Carl. I'm not near as polished speaker as these gentlemen are. And a lot of topics I'd like to cover. First off, I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee for having this hearing.
I'm sorry, but more than Coach Carl, can I get your full name? And where I know you're from Prineville, but you have to say it, I guess.
My name is Carl Shaver. I'm from Prineville. My wife and I have been involved in a program that is an NRA program for, I guess it's been 6-7 years now. This program is called Youth Hunter Education Challenge, otherwise known as YHEC. This program has been active in Oregon for, this is our 9th year here in Oregon. It's the longest running youth program the NRA has to offer. Through this program, the children that we work with, we teach them hunting scenario style shooting in rifle, shotgun, muzzleloader, and bow. They do orienteering, which is compass and map work, wildlife ID. They have a hunter's responsibility exam and a hunter's safety trail. So safety and ethics are two of the biggest things we really hammer on. Like I say, Oregon's relatively new to this program, but for the last 2 years, the Oregon seniors team has taken first place at the international competition. So we take it very seriously, and the kids are very dedicated and are very good at what they do. We have, I believe, 8 or 9 kids in the facility here tonight that have actually gone to international competition, being coached under myself, my wife, or Mr. Carlson, who is also here in this room. The folks that work with these kids, we take our own time, our own resources, to do so, because it's our passion, it's important to us. These kids are our future. You know, we go as far as I can speak for my wife and I. If it goes bang or twang, we've been certified to teach it and instruct it. We work with a lot of kids that don't have the opportunities that my children have. My daughter spoke earlier. She's been shooting since she was 2 years old.
This last year, she had a buck tag, doe tag, and an elk tag. She filled all three. Did an awesome job doing so. We are primarily funded through the Friends of the NRA, who hold banquets all over the state of Oregon, plus other states. But at this point, the Friends of the NRA here in Oregon has raised and put on the ground over $1 million for youth shooting programs, range improvements, and those type of things. We work with a lot of single moms, a lot of moms that don't have the abilities or the knowledge to teach their kids how to hunt, that it's important to them. Those are things that are, again, that are important to us to do so. I am also one that likes to give back. I've been a hunter ed instructor for over 10 years, along with my wife. I've been on the Access and Habitat Council out of Ontario, Oregon. We dedicate a huge amount of time to this program with these kids. These kids are very, very important to us specifically. But it's not just the kids. We also like to give back to our elderly. I had a gentleman who's 88 years old, couldn't hardly walk, contacted me this last year. He had drawn his 20th antelope tag for the state of Oregon, which I have no idea how he can do that.
How did he do that?
And wanted me to take him antelope hunting. And so we took him out, and the gentleman was actually able to successfully harvest his 20th antelope in the state of Oregon. Then we have my son, who 2 years in a row drew his antelope tag, so the next time he draws it, he gets his leg broke.
That's right. I think we're hearing his side of the story right after
you're
done. So
yeah.
He's next on the list.
Brandon is a fine example of what our program teaches, and that's ethics and safety. The second day, this young man actually had the opportunity to pack a bow, which he borrowed because his broke the first day. He borrowed his mother's bow, my arrows, and my broadheads. The second day he hunted with his bow and arrow, he passed a bull elk at 10 yards or 5 yards because it wasn't a good shot. But the bull gave him another opportunity at 10 yards where he made a perfect, very clean killing shot on this animal with less than a 30-yard recovery. Those are the things that we need to teach our children, and we do teach our children. And through the help of what you guys do here, we'll be able to continue to do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. One side note, I was wondering if your daughter could mentor me, because I didn't fill a deer, an elk, or anything. I get buck fever real bad still. And
she did
I
get hers in the Beulah unit this year.
Come on. come on.
Turn into a hunting camp.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, thank you very much. Brandon, does the family cover all the bases, or do you want to come up?
Yeah, I could or you guys can move on to somebody else.
Okay. How about Stephen Berglund, Bill Littlefield, and Larry Whitmire?
Habitat.
My last 100-miler after this, FYI, I have is Ken Hand. If there's somebody else, be ready to come up. I'll bring you up to it. But Ken Hand's the last one I know about. Well, except for Dale, who I think said, you're going to wait till your normal place in line? Great. Thanks. So, how would you like to go first, sir?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Larry Whitmire. I'm from Grants Pass. I was born and raised here. I've been a hunter and outdoorsman pretty much all my life. I killed my first buck when I was 10. And in 1980, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And so the last few years have been a little rough to hunt, but I have fantastic hunting partners to help me to get out and do the hunting. But I appreciate the disabled hunters mm-hmm. permits that I have. And the one thing that I'd like to bring up is the gated roads that block. Not only hunters, but outdoorsmen just like the outdoors. When you're in a wheelchair or a motorized wheelchair, you can't, when the gate is closed, you can't get out and hunt where you used to hunt years ago and for a long time. So it makes it kind of rough. And I was just wondering if there was any way of, you know, with the disabled people could get, you know, a key or the to the gate or the combination so that we could get down the road and hunt. But I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. I wrote down disabled permit holders access to gates. Thank you.
My name is Bill Littlefield, and I came here from Bend today. And I want to thank the committee for this opportunity. I think it's a great opportunity. I hope this is not only the first, but one of many. I'd also like to thank all my fellow hunters who came here today. This is my first time to this building, first time really in the city. And I haven't seen my kids, my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old little girl, for 5 days, but it was important to be here. I've got a number of issues that I want to touch on today. I won't read it all to you, but I did provide some handouts so that they can make their way around and you can look at them later. I also represent the Oregon Hunters Association. I'm a Central Oregon director for that group. And there's a few things related to that group that I'd like to bring up. We recently had discussions with the Department of Fish and Wildlife about the fee increase program. And the Oregon Hunters Association offered conditional support of the fee increase with some demands that we would like to see. So far to date, we haven't seen any progress on most of those demands, and it doesn't look like we're going to, which means we will more than likely remove our conditional support and not support the fee increase. One demand in particular that we had asked for was two additional OSP officers to help enforce wildlife rules and regulations and stop poaching. I had a discussion with one of the biologists in my local area who was out checking hunters and poachers in one of the units in our area. Half of all the people he checked were hunting illegally.
Half
of all the people in a 4-day period were hunting illegally. Between Prineville and the Columbia River up in Arlington, there are 4 OSP officers to cover literally thousands and thousands of acres and hundreds of square miles. The recent budget that was proposed by the governor was to reduce the number of OSP officers by 6. We were asking it to be increased by 2. That means based on what we see on the map, we were likely to lose 8 positions. Since that time, the budget was revised, and now they've said they're not going to reduce the number of officers. They're going to keep it the same. However, with the recent forecast for the economics and the budget coming up, we expect that's going to change, and they're going to have to go back to some cuts. I would urge you to look at cuts in administrative positions and things that are paper-pushing positions rather than field positions. I know that we have to make cuts. It's tough times for everybody, and we have to make sacrifices. But one of the things that's happening in the woods is the cost of hunting's gone up, unemployment's gone down. These times, people who would otherwise be good citizens may see an opportunity to break the law and get away with it. And what that does is reduce opportunities for everyone else who's playing by the rules. And as hunters, as moral and ethical hunters, we can't support that. And we need to put a stop to it, or it will get way out of hand. Now, for a few things from me personally. As I was listening to the testimony earlier, there was a few times when tears literally started to come to my eyes. The act of hunting, the sport, the tradition, and the bonds that are formed between hunters, men and women alike, are some of the most strong bonds you will ever see. The only bonds that come close to that are the bonds of immediate family and the bonds of our comrades at war. Because when you're out there hunting and you're alone with a few guys and you take the life of something else, that's serious. And it's not something people take lightly. It's something that people learn to cherish and appreciate and give thanks for. What we need to do is find ways to maintain this tradition. Excuse me. I'm not a crier, but this is passionate stuff, and I think my comrades that are here today tend to show that. One of the problems that we have as hunters is we like to spend our time in the woods. We like to spend it looking at nature, watching animals, watching the birds, playing with the fish, and physically getting around. And we have an enemy, and that enemy is usually in the form of some activist. What kills me and frustrates me to no end is these activists like to spend their time trying to figure out how to stop me from having fun with my time. I would invite them to join me, and they're welcome to, but I wouldn't encourage them to if they didn't want to. So it strikes me unfairly that they want to spend their time trying to take away my good time. I could spend an equal amount of time fighting them as they do put forth to try to prevent me from what I'm doing, and if I do that, I won't get to go hunting. So what's the point? For every one hunter that you see here today, there's another 100 hunters that feel the same way, and they're not willing to give up their time to do this. This isn't their thing. They would rather be at the woods than sitting here with a crowded room of people. This is not our passion. This is hard to do. Game population trends, it's no secret they've been going downhill. They've been going downhill in almost all areas of the state. The department puts out their management objective levels, and they continue to miss them. We continue to see legislation passed that inhibits their ability to do their job. We've got some bills on the table right now that are in committees that would change some of the hunting regulations. I think that the experts in this field are in the department, and we ought to listen to them, and we ought to follow their lead, and we need to give them the tools that they have available to do their job. I would also argue that hunters are the most economical tool to manage game populations. Another thing that frustrates me to no end is that we're not allowed to go out and effectively manage some of our predators, and yet the department is willing to pay people to go out there and kill cougars or bears or other predators, but we can't pay to do it. Now, let me give you a scenario maybe you can relate to. How many of you would pay for the privilege to change your oil or prefer to get paid by the guy who does change it? Every single one of you would love it if the guy who changes your oil or gal would pay you to do that. But how many of you would pay for the privilege to do that? We've got a whole bunch of volunteers here that are willing to go out and hunt if you'll let us, and we'll do it by your rules. But for some reason, that's not allowed. We've got a whole lot of people in this state that vote. Not all those people pay into this program. Licenses and fees and tags paid by hunters and fishermen, but everybody gets to decide if we get to do it or not. That just seems a little bit unfair. A couple more points, and then I'll pass the mic along. We heard earlier about the economic benefits of hunting, over $1 billion spent here last year. But there's more money spent on hunting and fishing than any other recreational activity. It outweighs golf, it outweighs professional sports, it outweighs any other recreational activity. And that's not coming from me. I work for a company in the marketing department, and when we study statistics and where we're going to get our message out, we know what the numbers are and they're available. I'm sorry I can't quote the source. I've hunted in 8 of the western states, and I'm sad to report that the worst hunting conditions of the states I've hunted in is here in Oregon. I'm forced to go and hunt in other states because the conditions and the opportunities aren't very good. What we seem to see here is that we offer an awful lot of tags, and I think we do that for revenue reasons. Everybody is anxious to draw a tag, and then they're disappointed when they go out there and they spend several days and they don't see a single shootable animal. I would argue that people would be much more happy to get a tag if it led to a good hunting opportunity. And a good hunting opportunity, as I would define it, is one where you see at least one shootable animal, or maybe several, and you actually get to choose which time you're going to pull the trigger. Maybe it's not the first day, maybe it's the fifth day, maybe it's the seventh day. There are other states that are managing certain parts of their hunting lands for quality hunts. And it might take you 12 years or 15 years to draw that tag, But when you do draw that coveted tag, you're grateful for it. This state has only one unit that they manage for quality, and it's not one of the big units. I think we need to consider changing that. I think we need to look at other states. Once again, I just want to thank the committee, and I very much appreciate this. And I'll pass the mic along to the next person.
Mr. Chair, one state, 42 game officers are on the chopping block.
Really?
42. Get all your senators.
There's only 123 total.
That's right. Go ahead, go on. We don't hold anything up.
I will make one statement, too. This committee is not going to hear, not even hear, not let vote. We're not going to hear any bills that infringe further on hunting. Yeah. If I hear any, it'll be because a senator sends a bill over here that wants to do it, and we will send it back, and it will repeal the 1994 ban on using dogs and cougars in the bill, and then we'll have a discussion after that.
Good evening, representatives and fellow hunters. My name is Stephen Berglund, and I'm down from Seattle. I work commercial fishing in Alaska. I live in Clackamas, and I'm on my way up to Seattle to be there in the morning, getting ready for the season. I want to applaud my fellow hunter for his very passionate plea and bring some levity to the situation by pointing out an ironic thing. My hunting heritage started in Sweden. I grew up watching Walt Disney. I was born in Alaska. My sister convinced me that Walt had the right idea. Don't hurt. How would you feel if somebody shot you? Well, after the BB gun, learning how to shoot, I started reading more hunting articles than fishing. And 5 miles out of Prineville, I hunted a jackrabbit successfully. And much to my surprise, I was a hunter. And more of a deer hunter. I think grouse is my favorite bird. But I enjoy the long days in the woods. If I shoot in my gun a couple of times a season, that's fine. But the irony I was talking about is the dog hunting. In Sweden, there isn't anything they don't hunt with a dog. And there is a lot of comparison to Sweden's health care. And I think a lot of those people who do that comparison would be surprised to know that there has not been a political party come out against hunting in Sweden. One of the things, and I have hunted in Sweden, I've gone back as an adult, lived there as a bit as a child, and one thing that I learned from Sweden, they have a longer history, of course, but they have classes. If you're going to hunt with a dog, you just don't get a dog and go hunting. There are things we need to learn from other countries. We need to grow. We're in our growing pains years here. But what was the funny part? I forget. Anyway.
Probably that my 13-year-old Weimaraner got banned from the Capitol. He can't come and come to this meeting. Oh, no,
oh,
sorry.
Let's
if he was to hunt you, that would have been fine.
Is that the one from
the show? He can hunt.
Anyway.
Well, Representative Van Orman is allergic to dogs. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Don't be not the dog's fault.
No. Anyway, there's hope. There's hope. People can be convinced that dog hunting is not something that was sent up from Satan or is just a pagan ritual that people do. And I just wanted to point that out in case somebody hadn't made that observation already. France, they hunt everything over there. I've heard from a reliable source. Hunting, I think us hunters have a fear that hunting will be abolished because we're so close to California. We see that no longer can shoot a cougar. I don't think that could happen if we use this day as a platform to grow and self-regulate ourselves, self-police ourselves, and not allow people to go out. And I think the biggest violation in Eastern Oregon is shooting somebody else's mule deer and filling their tag and calling it something as clean as party hunting when it's actually poaching.
Thank you very much. Bill, thank you for coming. I know hopefully it's not the last time you ever come to the Capitol, but it was quite a remarkable first time.
Thank you.
So Ken Hand, then if there's any other 100-milers that I've missed, we got one more. Sir, please go ahead and come on up. Any other 100-milers? Yep, another one. Come on up, all three of you, please. Then we're I think we're into the non-100-milers. While you're sitting down, I do want to point out that several of us, including my good friend, and this hunting is a bipartisan issue. Republican, Democrat, but the way we're staggered here happens to be party, but that's because we hold similar views, and that's what you'll find. And my friend, I'm a Democrat,
good Republican, good Democrat, great Republican. Good. Well, he's got snowball in it, or he had snowball in his district. But my friend from Happy
he's
Valley wanted
game.
Me to remind you that there are people from both parties and people from the Portland area who have sponsored bills to repeal the dog ban on cougars before. So I've done my good service, and
thank
that
you,
means
Chair.
He doesn't talk the rest of the time, so this is good work.
Mr.
Please.
Mr. Chair,
Representative.
I will say that is my claim to fame.
That's
is that
true.
Right?
I did. I carried the minority report out of
I did not
the
know
committee
that.
In
that was
2003.
Yep.
Please.
Okay.
Welcome.
First off, thanks for the invitation. I appreciate being here, Mr. Chairman and committee. I'm Dwayne Bernard from Rainier, Oregon. Born here in Siletz, Oregon, 70-some years ago. Been here ever since and been a hunter ever since. I have four children, two boys, two girls, that all hunt, as do the daughter-in-laws, son-in-laws, and the grandkids. We're a family of hunters. I came here mostly today to say what about the same thing, I guess, as my fellow A&H board member did back here. And incidentally, before I go any further, I'm on my last year of a second-year term on the state A&H board. I'm also a life member of Safari Club International, Oregon Hunters Association, and NRA.
You've been to a lot of banquets in your lifetime.
Almost every weekend.
I've been to a lot. I'm only 36, so. Yeah.
And another one Saturday night, if you want an invitation.
Is that right? I might.
Columbia County. Anyway, I like what my partner said here a while ago on from the A&H board. I'm a hunter representative. I am a hunter, one of the three hunter representatives, and I ask you to see that we get our fee increase in the future. Hope it's coming up.
You're saying about just the A&H surcharge right now? You're talking about
right.
Okay, not
yes.
necessarily the big fee increase,
no,
but the,
no.
Okay.
A&H.
Well, I'm just trying to. I don't want to riot here. So
it's, all right. 368 projects been funded through this program since 93. Over 7 million acres of private land hunting access provided since 93. And over 1 million acres of habitat improved. 4.5 million of private land hunting access. And with that, millions of acres of private timberland, especially on the west side of the Cascades, opened up because of our efforts and this program. It's just too good to have it die down or go away, and there's not quite enough money to do what we'd like to do. We're not able to fund everything we'd like to. I really am here to hopefully convince somebody that we need this surcharge. One other little thing that I would like to say, I'd like to see the mule deer increased in this state like everybody else in the room here, I'm sure. That's really a problem, as are the predators in this state, a real problem. I own a place in the state of Montana, have since early 90s. I used to hunt over there, still hunt over there. I hunted there when it was very good hunting. That's before they brought the wolves in. I have seen what you're going to see here, and it's not a pretty picture. It's not a good picture. It's terrible. I used to hunt over there 3 or 4 days and kill a nice bull and come home. Last year, I spent 30 days straight. I'm an experienced elk hunter. It's not my first day in the woods, but I never saw a bull. But I saw wolf tracks, and in the last 2 years, hate to say it, but I've seen 7 cougars over there.
7?
7.
Four.
Along with the wolves and wolf tracks behind every herd of elk. And it saddens me to look ahead and see what's going to happen here. I know your hands are tied because that's federal now, but when that changes, I hope the state here
already
does
it's on the verge. We have some tools, so yeah, thank you.
And I think that covers it for me. Thank you.
Thank you for coming,
My
sir.
Hands are tied, but theirs aren't.
Chair Claim Committee, My name is Ken Hand. I'm from Klamath Falls. I'm the regional director for Mule Deer Foundation. I'm sure you can't read my shirt from here, but it says, share the tradition. That is what Mule Deer Foundation is going for this year. I was very lucky this year to be able to share the tradition. Even though it wasn't in this state, I witnessed my granddaughter killing her first mule deer. So that was a good part. Anyway, and one of the thing everybody is talking about is the decline of the mule deer herd. And I will guarantee you, if you talk to the director or if you talk to Ron Anglin, I take no prisoners. We have had many heated discussions, but I'm very excited to be able to work with them this year, hopefully, on the Mule Deer Initiative, if you read the inside of the game synopsis. There's five hunt units that's going to be involved. There's Hepner, Murderers Creek, Steens, Warners, and the Mowry. The limiting factors that they have identified are forage with poor weather conditions for winter and summer range, predators, water, juniper encroachment, illegal activities, which include ATVs, poaching, road closures, noxious weeds, vehicle collisions, road densities, the health of the forest for winter and summer, lack of enforcement, and one I can attest to that, my son is a state game sergeant. Loss of habitat due to residential developments. There's a number of partners, which almost all of the sports organizations, the conservation organizations are involved in, the state agencies, and that is pretty much what I've got to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Byerlin. I'm Vice President of Oregon Guides and Packers, Legislative Director. Representative Krieger didn't mention that he had killed a monster bull elk a few years ago while he was sick. You know, I think it scored, 378 or somewhere in there.
Oh.
You know? And that's a little, I couldn't miss that. You know, so.
He got the picture in his office. He showed me today, at least.
I've never seen one that big on the hoof, you know. But I have, my family settled on the McKenzie River, coming to covered wagon, settled there. When I was a kid, a little guy, there was 9 children kind of in a 2-family, my uncle and my dad's family, you know, they had 9 kids. We ate a lot of venison, you know, don't know where it all came from, you know, and a lot of salmon, you know. But it was quite a tradition, you know, to hunt. I remember going to Eastern Oregon with the camps that we really looked forward to, and it's really a misnomer when people think that hunters of Oregon or families, I mean, there was occasional year, but we might have 12 people in camp, and we would usually spend 3 or 4 days. And at the most, and most hunters, that's what they did back then, was spent, you know, maybe 3 days, 4 days, and then they had to get back to work, you know. When the department changed how the seasons were to 10-day season, you know, over there, and you could only hunt one side or the other, people stayed for 10 days, you know, or longer, you know. So I'm not sure that it reduced some of the impact by doing that. But I remember when I was a kid in the mid-early 60s, seeing 300 deer a day, you know, in the Silver Lake unit. You know, there was times that we saw that migrating deer would leave ruts across the roads where their hooves would, you know, dig into the roads, you know. And at that time, we were told we needed to cut back on the hunting because there was too many hunters in the woods. So they went to the permit draw. And at that time, also, you could look across the big meadows on some of these ranches, and it would look like there was geese out there, but they were bedded down deer, you know, that had been run off the ridge because there was a lot of hunters. But from that day when they cut back on the hunters, there has not been more deer. There's been less deer. And it continues. So it was not a situation of hunters killing too many deer or having an impact. Or after the 30 or 35 years, they would have, you know, at least had an up year or two, you know. But it seems like it's been, you know, total decline. I have guided in the Steens Mountains for 5 years for a trout camp. And been all over the place, you know, many times. And 4 years assisting as an elk guide for unguided elk hunts. And the first year I was over there, the cowboys that I work with told me that the deer populations were absolutely in a toilet. I'd never seen so many big bucks, you know. And but we were around private ranches, big alfalfa fields, you know. And whatnot, we had to go through there. And one of the ranchers we worked with over there would probably have 300 antelope and a couple hundred mule deer on his alfalfa fields, you know, during the wintertime. And do I think that they deserve landowner preference tags for feeding those animals? Yeah, I do, you know. And it may not be a popular statement, but, you know, it's a big impact. And they love the animals. If they would not let you take them away, but they do want some compensation for all the feed that they put out, you know. The predators in the Steen Mountains in the last, oh, 5-6 years, you know, maybe even 8, you know, have increased dramatically, the lions. Our last elk hunt over there, we had 8 hunters in the party, or 8 people, you know, and so we had several trucks. We fanned out, you know, looking for tracks and whatnot. The entire hunt, we saw one set of tracks that belonged to an elk and stumbled onto another one. We ended up getting 2 5-points for our party, you know, but we probably, I'm going to say we saw 100 sets of cougar tracks. We did have one other set of tracks that we saw that belonged to a spike, and there was about a 14-year-old boy that went with my partner after that elk, and they tracked it for some ways, and I took the trucks and got down below in the canyon where the elk was headed, you know, and we just set up down there and waited, and they eventually found elk hair all over the ground, and the cat tracks were everywhere. And my partner told me there was 5 cats on that elk. And the elk did get away. It jumped back and forth over a fence 2 or 3 times and escaped, but it was gone. But if you don't believe that there's a bunch of cats over there, go over there with 10 inches of snow on the ground and take a drive around. You know, you won't go very far before you cut a cat track, you know. And it's habitat is the secret to any wildlife, you know, or people, you know. But if you don't have habitat, you stop and think about Western Oregon, about the hunting, you know, in Western Oregon and the black-tailed deer populations. We had vast logging, you know, that cleared ground and brought food up. We had the Tillamook burn, created tremendous hunting opportunities. Oxbow burn, and now the Biscuit Fire. See huge rebounds of deer, you know, in the Biscuit Fire, 500,000 acre fire that was down in southern Oregon. Even though it's not really good country for them, it's still, you know, big rebounds. 2 years ago, with my hunting partner, we went up in the morning, didn't get there early, drove around. We saw 23 bucks taken. Some of the trucks had 3 of them in the back of them, you know. And that takes back to old days, but that was because of that burn and the new feed coming on, you know. And it's habitat. These animals don't have proper feed. They're not going to survive. They're going to catch every cold that comes down the road. Lost hair disease, you know. They're always trying to figure out what's wrong with these animals. And it comes down to nutrition. They don't have the nutrition and the food, you know. They're not going to do well. And populations aren't going to increase. They're going to fall. And a lot of the deer now you see are coming into town looking for food. You're going to ranchers or farmers' fields, food, you know. There's a pattern, you know, and it comes down to habitat and feed, you know. And if you look at the other states of the Union, I know they're not mule deer or they're not blacktail, but the white-tailed deer, you know, throughout the country is a plague. There's some states that have, you know, I mean, if you get one tag, you got to take a bunch of them, you know, because they want to get the populations down. And but they have food programs. They don't have as many predators, you know. Why not? They're all deer, and they all go along with that. And on one other point, I don't like the makeup of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. And the Oregon Guides and Packers does not like what we're seeing. And we don't need academics. We don't need Forest Service leaders. We need property owners. We need hunters. We need fishermen. We need the people that are in these rooms. You got better commissioners sitting behind me than you could ever put on that board.
No doubt.
You know. And please help us get some of those seats to the people that pay for this industry.
Thank you all for coming so far. I gave obviously some latitude on my 3 to 5 minute rule, but when you come this far to the Oregon Capitol, you sort of get free rein. Not that those of us who only live a mile from the Capitol, like me, if you're that close, sorry to cut you off when we get here, but we do got to get through now everybody else. So let's we'll try and go sort of 3 minutes or so, if that would be good. We've got a little timer. It'll start
kind of beeping and lighting up at you to remind you.
Man was raising his hand.
Is there one more 100 miles? You want to come up while we're going? Yeah, come on up. Let me call the next three to come up. Bob Keynes. Kearns. Bill Richardson. And then Dave Riley, if you want to get in the queue, you'll be up as soon as Brandon finishes.
Mr. Chair,
yep.
What's the average number of animals that a cougar takes down a year? Deer?
40. No, did you say a year?
Yeah.
Yes, that's not a year, is it?
Four? Deer a week?
Yeah, deer a week.
Yeah, 52.
Yeah, 40 times 52.
They eat fresh meat. Cougars like fresh meat. In the summertime, they kill 2 to 3 a day, because a week, and because of the fresh meat. Wintertime, they can last longer.
That's ridiculous.
So a year, Representative, a lot.
Thank you.
I'm not good at math, but a lot. Brandon, go ahead, please.
My name is Brandon Shaver. I'm from Prineville. I just want to speak a little bit on the YHEC program. One thing that I see back east, because this program is back east in a lot of the schools, as a sport like football and baseball, a lot of schools are buying property so they can host for these kids to practice on. This program, like my father said, has been around in the NRA for 23 years. And in 23 years, we've educated 1.2 million kids with never a shooting accident. We had an interview from some people at previous international asking, are you guys concerned with a shooting accident? They go, no, we're more concerned with heat stroke and snake bites than a shooting accident with these kids. The people that come down to put on this international event volunteer. They are not paid to come down. They are all volunteers running these events for 2 weeks to 3 weeks at a time. They enjoy it. It's a passion. Like my father said, it's a passion. We are very passionate about the youth that are coming up because it is our next generation. And I just want to thank everybody that has volunteered to come tonight and help out, and those that have come from a long distance to come in the chair, you guys, for putting this on and hearing from everybody.
Our
thank
pleasure,
you.
Brandon. Thank you for coming. So I've got one of my three. I don't know if we lost somebody. Dave Wiley. Okay, and Bill Richardson and Bob Keenans.
Kearns.
I'm sorry.
Chairman, committee members, my name is Bob Kearns, and I'm an upland bird hunter from Portland. I'm originally from John Day, and I'm in the hay export business from the Pacific Northwest to the Asian Rim countries. I listened to comments here tonight, and I've got to tell you, I got some good news for everybody. About 5 years ago, I got involved with my friend John Kilkenny and some other hunters, upland bird hunters near Heppner, and we formed a Pheasants Forever chapter. I'm also on the board of the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, and we coupled that together and did some funding, and we now have a habitat specialist in Heppner. We have 100,000 acres of public ground that we're doing projects on. We have a tractor, a mower, a drill, the pickup. We had our first Portland PF, Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, auction in Portland last March. We'll have our fourth auction in Heppner on April 4th. It's tremendous. Our goal is to provide access to people on this 100,000 acres with projects to help kids, so with hunter safety, and so kids have a place to hunt with their parents, to help farmers, the local farmers in those communities, which we all know have been stressed by economic times. And finally, to provide, you know, the opportunity so people can come over there and hunt and support the communities. It's been a big success. We've had great support from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We continue to expand our role. We're going to have a great auction in Heppner April 4th and a great one in September in Portland. I encourage everyone here to get involved in our organization. It doesn't take a whole lot of money. It takes no money. We're doing projects all the time. Happy to do it. We're having a real impact on the communities, and we thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for the work you're doing, Bob. Bill.
My name is Bill Richardson. I live at 24550 Irvin Road, Philomath, Oregon. I'm the lands program manager for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation in Oregon and Washington. And Chairman Clem and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. In 25 years, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's mission to ensure the future of elk, other wildlife, and their habitat has never changed. Oregon has RMEF's largest membership. We have 13,000 members and over 1,000 Oregon volunteers dedicated to our mission. The Elk Foundation accomplishes our mission by partnering with state, federal, tribal, and private land managers, with Oregon State University, the U.S. Forest Service, Pacific Northwest Experiment Station, and other conservation organizations, including many that are here in this room this evening. We especially value our partnership with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Everything we do is connected with ODF&W. Through 2008, RMEF has completed nearly 600 projects in Oregon that protected and enhanced wildlife habitat on over 660,000 acres. We have permanently protected nearly 40,000 acres in Oregon through acquisitions and conservation easements. ODF&W is consulted on every lands project that we do. The close relationship of ODF&W and RMEF is exemplified in some of our acquisitions. We don't typically own land long-term, so our acquisitions are eventually held by state or federal agencies or private landowners with a conservation easement that protects the ground from development in perpetuity. ODF&W has been the takeout partner or long-term landowner many times. Together, we secured nearly 2,500 acres for the Philip Schneider Wildlife Area, over 3,200 acres for the White River Wildlife Area, and we are currently partnering on 849 acres owned by RMEF and managed by ODF&W as part of the Ladd Marsh Wildlife Area. And I anticipate further collaboration on lands projects with ODF&W in the future. RMEF also enlists conservation easements that protect important elk habitat in perpetuity. ODF&W helps us identify those projects, develop management plans, and confirm that the conservation easement benefits wildlife for the citizens of the state of Oregon. Habitat stewardship, wildlife research, and conservation education is accomplished through our Project Advisory Committee, or PAC, review process. The grant requests for activities that benefit elk and other wildlife are considered by PAC agency professionals from ODF&W, the Oregon Department of Forestry, Oregon State University, the timber industry, the U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, the Blue Mountains Elk Initiative, and RMEF. And through the PAC process, we annually fund over $200,000 for wildlife habitat projects in Oregon and another $25,000 in conservation, education, and hunting heritage projects. These projects occur on state, federal, and tribal and private lands. They often reach across property lines. We love it when we can do that. Our funds are matched by state and federal agency partners and by other hunting and conservation groups here tonight. And this year, RMEF funds leveraged over $3 million in Oregon project activity benefiting wildlife managed by ODF&W. And the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation is committed to ensuring the future of elk and other wildlife in Oregon. Thank you.
Yeah, good timing. Thank your foundation board members and your members, as you count them, for us, for all the work.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi. Chairman Klim, members of the committee, my name is Dave Wiley. I'm a native Oregonian. I understand that's a rare breed, hearing from you guys tonight. I've been a hunter since I was 12 years old. I found my first license the other day. And I'm lead volunteer for Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. There are more than 13,000 of us, as you've heard from Bill, and our members strongly support sound wildlife management by professionals. Our members contribute a tremendous amount of their time, treasure, and sweat equity in performing volunteer projects in the state. This year, as Bill mentioned, our Project Advisory Committee approved $200,000 in grants for 27 projects, primarily forage habitat and water developments. And those 27 projects will impact 24,000 acres of habitat. ODFW received several of those grants, and we enjoy working with them. I must tell you that, as Bill mentioned too, that we didn't do those 27 projects all ourselves. All the conservation groups that are sitting in this room, most of them participated. Now, come springtime and summer, those 27 projects are going to go on the ground, and they'll be performed not only by the agencies and contractors for those agencies, but by volunteers from Rocky Mountain Elk, Mule Deer, Oregon Hunters Association, Wild Turkey. Because the foundation supports sound wildlife management, it's probably no surprise that I'm going to suggest to you that we also support ODF&W to the limit. We recommend their budget to you and the funding measures that they propose to support it with. We also support strongly the Access and Habitat program. We work with them all the time in building projects. Now, a complete wildlife management organization has two parts. In Oregon, we have the ODFW. They do the biological side. And we have the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Division, which does the enforcement side. The enforcement is vital to this program. Without it, all the biological side would be without value. And so consequently, I'd like to tell you that we support the Oregon State Police budget, and we'd like to see them fully staffed and fully funded. Now, I'm going to be real quick here.
Okay.
As you've heard from ODFW that their economic research has pointed out that they produce about $1 million for the economy. I don't want to dispute them, but I will. It's more like $1.4 million because they left off the equipment purchases. Now, if you take $1.4 million and divide that by half of the biennium budget for ODFW and OSP combined, you'll find that the return on investment is $10 for every $1 of budgeted expense, and about 19,500 jobs, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So supporting fish and wildlife in the state of Oregon is a good bet in these hard economic times. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Joe Ricker, George Houston, and Rick Williams. There's a trick you do. So after that, I'll just get you ready. Kathy Hamill, Rick Breckel, and Wayne Endicott will be the next three. Okay. Please.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I'm Joe Ricker. I live here in Salem. I'm the Midwest Director for the Oregon Hunters Association. Been a hunter all of my life that I can remember, that is. I can remember following my dad around through the woods, and I don't know how old I was because I can't remember how long ago that was. At my age, I'm lucky if I remember what I did yesterday. Like my friend Jim Morrell here, I'm a 33-year veteran of the active Army. He was in the Navy, and I'll forgive him for that. But I've had the opportunity to hunt in 8 different countries, 4 of those while I was in the military in Europe. And of all those experiences, I have to tell you that the best experience is hunting here in Oregon with my family. The next point is that I'd like to read the mission statement of Oregon Hunters Association. Our mission is to provide an abundant, huntable wildlife resource in Oregon for present and future generations. Enhancement of wildlife habitat and protection of hunter rights. We take that mission statement very seriously. Everything that the organization does, we try to make sure that, in fact, it supports one of those missions. First of all, I'd like to speak just a moment about the ODFW budget that's coming up for review or approval. Oregon Hunter Association has taken a conditional support position on that budget. Conditions are that ODFW embark on an aggressive program to increase the deer and elk herds. We understand that that's not something that can occur overnight. They didn't get in this condition overnight, and they probably won't come out of that condition overnight. We see their recent mule deer initiative as a step toward that goal of increasing the number of mule deer. And Oregon Hunter Association is appointing members in the different regions to help on that initiative, work on those working groups. We also support the new youth hunter packages, even though we know that's going to cost them money. We've got to look to the future, and we understand that the future of hunting in Oregon is in the youth. The third thing is the occupational or miscellaneous occupational and commercial fee licensing. Let me just give you an example of why we think those fees need to be so increased. Some of them haven't been increased for over 20 years, number one. And I'm just going to use one license as an example. The cervid license to raise cervids cost the cervid rancher $5 plus $1.50 service fee. $6.50.
Not per animal, total.
For each licensee.
For each license.
For each license, $6.50. There are 16 cervid licenses issued in the state of Oregon, but the cost of running the program is somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 a year. So we think that that's a perfect example of why these fees need to be increased drastically to start trying to catch up. I wouldn't expect to see that they'd be increased enough to cover the complete cost, but at least we should start in that direction and make it a gradual increase. We see the wildlife enhancement and enforcement provisions of the budget are very critical. You've already heard that about the poaching problem. The other night at the sport group leader meeting at ODFNW, we were briefed on a study that they had done where they had collared deer. And then they went back and they found out what caused the mortality of these collared deer, these radio collared, GPS collared deer. 14% of those collared deer were taken by legal hunting. 12% of them were taken by illegal hunting, almost equal. There was 43% that they were unable to determine what the mortality was from because they hadn't found the animal in time to determine what really happened to it or wasn't able to find the animal at all. So that's why we're so strong on enforcement. We also ask that ODFNW review their current management activities and identify areas of inefficiency and where effectiveness can be improved. Next subject I'd like to talk to is the access.
I could ask you to kind of wrap up because
okay,
I know
access
we
and
can
habitat?
Have you back, I know, because okay. you're in town.
Access and Habitat Board is up, or Access and Habitat Program is up for review, and it's a $2 surcharge, as you know, and the Oregon Hunters Association supports that net fee increase. And thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. You bet. Greg?
Chairman Kleiman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. My name is Rick Williams, and I reside at 314 Southeast 202nd Avenue in Gresham, Oregon. I'm the Vice President of Oregon Hunters Association, and as a native Oregonian, I've been enjoying the bounty of our natural resources most of my life. The last time that I testified before this committee in 2007, I was asking for your support of SB 892, the new Mentored Youth Hunting Program. That bill went on to become law and was implemented by ODFW in time for the 2007-2008 hunting seasons. I'm proud to tell you today that because of your support, 3,400 new hunters aged 9 to 13 have participated in the program without a single accident. Thank you for supporting youth hunters. Young hunters need continued opportunities to keep their passion for the outdoors alive as they move out of the mentored youth age range. Fortunately, ODFW has lots of hunting programs designed to do just that. They offer youth-only hunts for most big game species, special pheasant and duck hunting opportunities, and they sponsor youth educational seminars across the state. These and other important ODFW programs are at risk due to Oregon's impending fiscal crisis. It's important to note that even before the current economic downtrend, ODFW's funding was decreasing due to the declining hunter numbers. To address this issue, ODFW conducted 13 town hall meetings across the state and asking the Oregon's hunting and sporting community for license and fee and tag increase. Hundreds of Oregons turned out for the meetings and the message was clear. Oregon's sporting men and women would be willing to bear the cost of a fee increase if they got something in return, and what they asked for was more opportunities. Specifically, significant numbers of attendees asked that ODFW maintain and increase youth participation opportunities and that they do a better job of addressing the issues of poaching and depredation negatively impacting our wildlife resource. ODFW's budget proposals includes funding for current youth programs and some enhancements. It also includes maintenance funding for OSP Fish and Wildlife Division and some enhancements. Unfortunately, the budget proposal does not include any additional provisions for addressing the issue of wildlife depredation, one of the three mandates by ODFW's constituents. Oregon's cougar population is now estimated at 6,600 across the state, and ODFW's cougar management plan states that every cougar kills approximately 40 big game animals a year. Simple math tells us that that means 264,000 big game animals are removed annually from our herd base, or roughly one every 2 minutes. That's nearly 60 in the length of time we've been here tonight. Please keep that number in mind as you consider legislation that could impact science-based wildlife management in Oregon, and please hold ODFW accountable to the mandates of their constituents in return for their proposed fee increase. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good to see you again. And again, Representative Roblin, if he hadn't chaired this committee, I don't think the youth mentor program would now be lost. So thank you to Representative Roblin. Thank you.
Welcome. Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is George Houston. I live in Sandy, Oregon. I'm the immediate past president of the Oregon Chapter Foundation for North American Wild Sheep. Each one of the rams on the front of your handout are from the state of Oregon. There's currently 32 herds of California bighorns and 12 herds of Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep in the state of Oregon. And there's 5 to 6 mountain goat groups in the state of Oregon. ODFW is doing an outstanding job at doing everything they can to assure a quality hunting opportunity for our hunters in the state of Oregon. Last year, we issued 89 bighorn sheep tags and about 9 Rocky Mountain goat tags. The hunters did very, very well. The Oregon Chapter Foundation for North American Wild Sheep has got about 325 members who are a hunting and conservation organization. We were incorporated in 98. We cover the entire state. It's important to us that bighorn sheep and Rocky Mountain goats are restored to their historic bighorn and Rocky Mountain goat habitat. Each year we have a banquet and a fundraiser. We put that money into the ground. Oh, since 2001, we've put approximately $250,000 into our grant and aid program. That's gone to organizations like OSP, ODFW, and other organizations, once again, putting our money on the ground. We've also, during that period of time, over the last 5 years, our hands-on projects, which are 2 to 3 years, we've put in 4,700 work hours with the volunteers that we put on the ground. That's improving habitat and other water supply amendments for our big game animals. Our main concerns is poaching, predators, communicable disease, and habitat degradation. Most of the bighorn herds are in pretty good shape in the state of Oregon. We're having some problems in the northeast corner on the Idaho border due to communicable disease that's passed by domestic sheep to our bighorn sheep. Some of our herds have been lost. That is, there's no lamb survival, and eventually all of the rams and all of the ewes have died from pneumonia. We're working that problem. We could use some help. Some of the other challenges that we have are from predators. Cougars are taking lambs and ewes, and they're taking adult rams. Some of our herds, like the herd around John Day, they aren't doing well now at all, and they aren't doing well because of competition with the wild horses and because of predation. And you talk to the people that hunt there and work there, and they'll tell you that we're having problems. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and chat with you this evening about what we're doing in the state of Oregon. I'd like to see this made an annual event so that we could come here every year and kind of give you a status report on how.
That mean you want us to go to a full-time legislature just so we come here again?
Perhaps every other year.
Yeah.
Well said.
We do have interim committees. We can come down for a night. So
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Full-time legislature.
So I've got Kathy Hamill, Rick Breckel, Wayne Endicott. You going to wave? You're not Rick. I know you're Kathy. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Cameron Haynes, then, to fill in for Kathy. Then after that, just so you kind of know you're coming, Bill Cluding, Alan Day, and Dale, if you're still here, if you wanted to. Yeah, it's your turn this time for real. All right. I don't see the falcon. Somebody apparently wanted to bring their falcon and show it off. I'm not sure the legislature, since they won't allow dogs, will allow a falcon, but I don't see any around here.
We do falcons.
What's that?
It's okay.
Yeah. Oh, I guess they could have brought their falcon.
That would have been fine.
Oh,
yeah. It's the dog.
Well,
it's your dog.
Between chambers. My dog in particular is apparently the problem.
Is it allowed? Is your dog allowed?
No, my dog's banned. All of them are banned. Yes, welcome.
Yeah, they are.
Thank you, Chair Clem and the members.
I'm not that great at doing stuff like this.
Just relax. We're not exactly good. We're not good either. So
definitely not as good as some of these people. I'm grateful they've come up here with the numbers they have and the backing. My name's Cameron Haynes. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. I grew up in a small town outside of Springfield and went to high school, less than 100 kids. And just basically grew up hunting. I don't really have all the answers as far as management practices or legislation, but I just want to talk about how hunting has impacted my life. And thank you for this opportunity. I'm also thankful I live in Oregon because we have a lot of great opportunity here as hunters, I think. I mean, I know there can be improvements, but, growing up on the west side, it seems like you can get a tag over the counter, you can hunt, and that's what people want to do. They just want to get out there and experience what the mountains have to offer. Basically, when I grew up, I wasn't that great at anything. My dad didn't hunt. I started hunting because of my friend. And we like the challenge of getting out in the woods and trying to find a big blacktail buck. But I didn't stand out for anything until I started bow hunting 20 years ago, and I killed my first bull with a bow. And finally, at that time, I felt special. I felt like I'd done something that not very many guys that I knew had done. And it's hard, and I was drawn to the challenge. And then from there, that was like really the first noteworthy thing that had ever happened, and I kind of was inclined to become a writer, and nobody gave me a chance to do that either. I kept plugging away and got an article published in Oregon Hunter magazine, and got another article published, and then wrote my first book, which you guys have a copy of there. It's Bowhang Trophy Blacktail. I self-published that, borrowed money from everybody I knew, and just barely paid everybody off just recently. I became the editor of a magazine. Again, nobody ever would have predicted that. I wrote my second book, which is now in its fifth printing. And now I'm the current TV host of Elk Chronicles, which is the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's TV show. And without hunting, none of this would have been possible without the opportunities we have here in Oregon. I think coming up hunting, I've learned so many lessons in the mountains that I never would have learned on the outside world. I know I wouldn't be the person I am today without hunting. And what it has showed me, and hopefully my kids, and I have my youngest son with me here, is that anything is possible if you work hard. Because all I had was a dream, it worked out. My youngest son back there, Truett, he's 11. He killed his first bear. My oldest son killed his first bull this year and killed a buck with his bow. And, I'm just thankful. There's a few things, or a couple quick things. One thing I want to mention, I'm real grateful to the large timber companies for allowing access on their hunting lands. A lot of guys, like I grew up on the west side here, without Weyerhaeuser and the support they give to hunters, a lot of guys wouldn't have the opportunity to hunt. I couldn't afford to go over east and go to the Eagle Cap Wilderness like I do now without having lands available. And they don't have to do that, but they do, and I feel like we serve a vital role to them as far as controlling deer and elk numbers, which protect their investment too. And another thing that I just like to see, the last thing, is I used to like the check stations coming out of the woods back in the day. A lot of people hunted what we called windling, and there'd be check stations. You could see what kind of bucks were being harvested, how many. You knew the exact numbers, and I just think it was good information. I'd like to see that. I know there's volunteers that would be more than willing to help out there. Again, thank you for your time, and thanks for giving an opportunity for guys like me to live a dream.
Thank you for sharing your story with us, Cameron.
Good evening, and thank you for being here. My name is Rick Breckel, and I'm a recently retired wildlife biologist from the U.S. Forest Service. Half my career was with BLM, half my career was with Forest Service, and the majority of that west of the crest of the Cascades on the Willamette National Forest. I grew up in Oregon as a hunter, and I'd like to make 3 points here tonight. You have my written testimony. First of all, I'd like to ask that you support OSP, game officers. And the reason is that we conducted a study on the Willamette between the years 1980 and 1990 where we collared 258 elk in cooperation with ODF&W. These elk were monitored for 10 years to follow their migration routes and determine mortality causes. Results of that study showed that 35% of those elk were killed by poachers and another 25% undetermined. So as high as 60% herd losses by poaching. There's no reason to believe that those numbers are too much different than now, because other than the study that Joe mentioned, I don't know of any comprehensive studies different than that. And frankly, we can't afford those losses. Second point, I hope that you will encourage more logging and controlled burning to develop big game forage on federal and state lands.
Yeah, no problem with this committee, by the way.
And when I graduated from OSU in wildlife, they said every animal, they taught me that every animal needs food, water, and cover. Well, west of the crest of the Cascades, there's no problem with cover. There's no problem with water. The problem is food, and I think most biologists right now would agree with me that the limiting factor for most herd numbers, one of the biggies, is food and forage, and notwithstanding the impacts from predators and disease and whatnot, but food is a big one, because if they're healthy, they can withstand a lot of those other things. Third point, I hope you will support your real customers, like those sitting behind me and the ones that they represent. Because as a federal biologist, special interest groups with funding for lawsuits have successfully gained favor in many of the federal and state project proposals over the last 25 years, while the silent majority reap the consequences of that lack of management action. I'm no longer restricted by what I say, so I can say it now that I'm retired. I encourage you to make decisions and to encourage the federal land managers and the state land managers to not bend to the pressures of those vocal, well-funded, but small interest groups. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Hello, Chair Clam, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Wayne Endicott. I reside in Springfield, Oregon. I was born and raised in Oregon, and for the last 19 years, I've owned an archery shop and sold bows and arrows for a living. You have to excuse me, I have a bad cold.
We've all had it this last week, so capital crud, we call it.
I wanted to take a minute. My father raised me in Oregon and loved to hunt and fish and trap, and he was very passionate about it. He was very serious with it. He passed on to me very, very strict rules and education when it came to hunting and fishing and trapping, and I've been fortunate enough to you see this little handout I did. I've been fortunate enough to raise my sons and my daughters and their friends. And Representative Gillum, I'm the guy that's going to drag guys like you over. You'll see some guys in this little handout that I drag along that have nothing to do with hunting and fishing until they wandered into my archery shop and bought some bows and arrows, and I took them. But real quick, if we turn through this, I won't read in most of these, just some highlights. I mean, one of the number one lessons I'd like to share with you that I love to pass on to the kids is respect. Respect for the use of a weapon, respect for private property, respect for God's wonderful creation, respect for the animals by which you pursue by fair chase. I love that portion of hunting. Responsibility is the next page. Responsibility to report all game violations, to obey all game laws, to leave the land better than you found it. Moving on to education, it was big with my father. My father always took time to really educate me on plants and vegetation types, and the wise use of grazing and timber harvest, the natural cycle of wildfire, and of course, coming from a trapping background, the effects of overpredatorization on deer and elk, which we've heard a lot on tonight. The next page, big portion, and I think we've heard a lot of that on tonight, is camaraderie. Camaraderie in hunting camp is huge. Friendships, you know, can create memories that last a lifetime. A verse out of Proverbs, I love a man that shows himself to be friendly, is friendly, but a friend stays closer than a brother. And then the achievement page, all these kids either belong to me or I've taken them on these trips. And the achievement page, you can look through that. Hard work and persistence pays off. Honoring achievement of others is huge. Those are some great animals taken there. And then the last page I want to share with you, it's a big thanks to ODF&W and what they've done. And most of the achievement pages, most of those have been either youth hunting or mentored youth. And, without the programs that we have through ODF&W, it wouldn't have been possible. I mean, it's just such a great advantage to have that available for the kids today. You see on the mentored program here, little Mason Davis, Chris Stewart here that's filming, he donated his Sled Springs bear tag last year so this 11-year-old could take that beautiful Simon bear there in that picture. And little Cody Offshus, a little guy that target shoots in my leagues, in my kids' league, I knew he could do it. I donated a antlerless tag that we received on a damage deal, and he was able to take that doe at the age of 9 years old with his bow. Huge accomplishment. And my wife and my daughter there, that's a little bit deceptive. My daughter is 8. She did not kill that big bull, but she was right there when mom actually was able to harvest that big 6-point bull. And all that to say that, the things that ODF&W has done for us is building a great foundation for the future for our youth. And it's just a special time to be here before you and say thank you for those programs so we can take these kids. Bill Jordan owns Realtree, and he always says at the end of his program, take the time to take a youth hunting and fishing so they too can enjoy the outdoors. There's nothing any more true and nothing any more rewarding than to take a youngster to Sled Springs and watch him harvest his first bear and see the glint in his eye and a memory that he'll never lose and a passion that'll drive deep within him that he'll never lose also. And it'll give him an appreciation for the love for the outdoors like none other. Thank you for your time.
So Bill, Alan, and Dale, speaking of dads and children, I've got a little sixth-generation Oregonian out there that needs her goodnight kiss, so I'm going to step out and give my daughter a goodnight kiss. Chair Van Orme is going to do this for a few minutes.
Thank you. So Bill, Dale, are you coming up?
I'm Dale.
I've got Bill Cluding, Alan Day, and Dale Bellard. There you are, yes. So go ahead, Dale.
Okay. Chair Clem, that's to the committee. My name's Dale Ballard, Capital Chapter, Oregon Hunters Association President here in Salem. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for being here. This is quite extraordinary, and it's deeply appreciated that you're taking the time to be here this evening. It was not many years ago when I joined OHA. I liked what the organization stood for. Little did I know the amount of volunteer time, money, projects, and education that OHA participated. Interacting with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon State Police, Bonneville Power, United States Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, Rocky Mountain Elk, and many other organizations by members to enhance and rehabilitate habitat and create a better wildlife environment. Every project we engage in not only benefits animals we love to hunt, but all wildlife benefits. Our projects have demonstrated countless times what can be accomplished, whether it be restoring native flora, protecting critical habitat, or providing water and feed sources for animals. OHA is dedicated to helping all wildlife. As I said, it was not long ago when I became involved. I quickly realized the importance of the OHA mission, protecting our hunting heritage and opportunities. I never dreamed I'd be sitting here in front of you today with an all-important message. I am profoundly fearful our heritage may once be all that remains of what once were outstanding hunting opportunities throughout this state. Out-of-state influences would have us give up our cherished hunting privileges. Newcomers to Oregon who have no idea what hunting is about or the dedication we hunters have to preserving wildlife. Those influences I spoke of, animal rights activists, seek to outlaw hunting. They provide financing for ballot measures and lawsuits while spreading misinformation. Never have I seen one at any of our habitat projects. Non-hunting voters dictating hunting rights is wrong, especially when they contribute little to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife funding. One of the issues that must be confronted as hunters' numbers fall is that we and sport fishers provide nearly a third of the ODFW operating capital through purchases of licenses and tags. Opportunities, without question, have diminished, and disillusioned hunters and fishers are seeking other forms of recreation. Predation by cougars has dealt big game herds a serious blow, resulting in lost hunting opportunity. As a result, most premium hunts have at least a 10-year waiting period. Couple that with user groups who use ODFW services but are operating at the expense of the sport hunter and fisher because they pay extremely small permit fees, some of those fees which have not been raised in 30 years. Hunters and fishers 6 years ago offered unprecedented support to ODFW to raise our licenses and tag fees. There must be a significant fee increase to those who are not paying their fair share, especially if our license and tag fees will be raised again. Finally, while there are serious concerns surrounding the ODFW Commission and its decisions, I'd like to voice my support for the agency's staff. I believe them to be professional, hardworking, and dedicated to their mission. They have several outstanding accomplishments the last 6 years, and I commend them. One thing that Representative Clem mentioned, he wanted suggestions. As I look around here tonight, look at the people that are here. If the commission were representative of the people that it's supposed to be, would we be here tonight? Something needs to be changed, some transparency. There needs to be, maybe they should have a few meetings in the evening like this so we could be here. I think that would be a great idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's very nice.
Board members.
I'm Vice Chair Van Orman.
Van Orman. My name is Alan Day, and I live in Aurora, Oregon. And I come as a private individual. But just before I start, I belong to OHA. I'm a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation member. I'm a board member of Foot Oz. I believe in supporting. I believe in conservation and do it with all these things you hear the organization do. But really, I come because hunting's been special to me all my life. Killed my first deer when I was 12 years old. I come from Montana. But then I didn't kill another animal for many years. I got married, come to Oregon. Was busy raising a family. And my kids, you know, just with the kids, I didn't have time, money, and friends that, you know, I could go hunting with. And it was a special bond that I remember in my youth was going hunting. And I was able to go back hunting. And I got two twin boys who was active in sports. And we lived in Camby, which is a sports-oriented community. And so their high school and college days, I never had that opportunity to take them hunting. I have now, and it's been very special, that bond you have, that you grow and have. And so... And I'm going to extend that to my grandchildren now. I got two younger boys who are just in that age where they can hunt. But also I'd like to mention I have had a father-in-law who's passed away. But he was blind. He went blind when my wife was 2 years old. But he used to go over and he was camp cook. And that was as far as history. He would go... did everything. In the stories, I was never, this was before my time, I was never able to go hunting with him.
Thank you.
But I did get him his handicap fishing license. Then when ODWF liberalized the hunting rules, it was my dream for him to actually shoot a deer or an elk. And I actually had a target practice where I could kind of gently aim them. And I had... a couple friends over near Eastern Oregon, near Pineville, Madras area, that was going to allow us to hunt, but then the elk never showed up.
That happens.
But so that's a moment. And I've hunted in all western states. and seen, you know, some of the problems you described with some of the herds. But I think that we've got four major problems here that I think are being addressed, but it's, you know, the counts are down, disease is an issue, and we've got hunting pressures. And with that, I would just close in saying that, yeah, I think this, you know, even a special disabled area, you know, where we could bring a disabled in would be very beneficial. For the handicapped, like my father-in-law, you know, I could take him if I could drive him in or go in, or some of these who cannot fit, who are still, can still see. But I have a hunting friend who had a back surgery come up partially disabled. He can't get in there now. He used to, you know, get around and be beneficial. Then I want to thank our LOP holders and people in those small plots, so like in Christmas Valley. I got a friend that's got a couple of alfalfa circles, which is small, and but provides major feed for these deer and antelope. And in fact, the elk are a problem in some areas over at Christmas Valley for tearing up the fields. And they provide a tremendous economic benefit for us hunters and for the state. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming in. Bill?
Chair Clem, for the record, Bill Cluding, committee, thank you. You've heard a lot of stuff tonight. You're going to hear more. But, you know, one thing that did pop up, when our management of our federal forests went downhill, everything else went downhill, too. But let's start right here in the valley. You realize that, you know, luckily Oregon's had some pretty good rules on bringing in exotic species. But the state of Washington slipped up, and it darn near destroyed our blacktail. Out home, where I live, south of Dallas, it killed 50% of the deer. Hair loss syndrome, little tiny louse. It spread all the way down the west coast now. Luckily, the Cascades kept it from going into the mule deer. If it would have got over the mountain, we wouldn't have a mule deer now. We wouldn't have a season next year, I guarantee you. What they're afraid of, though, it's going to sneak across the southern end of this state and get the mule deer and then work its way back up. And it's still here. I seen a doe just the other day out home. One whole side was red and white, where she's rubbed all the skin off, scratching on a tree. It's still here. Let's jump over on the east side of the mountain. Oh, by the way, did you know there's still a deer season going on right now today?
Melrose Plush Unit, well, elk, Melrose Plush.
Willamette Unit, it's been almost 6 months long, and I think that's wrong. Now, there is some problem areas, but if you check those areas out, there's no hunting signs all around. The nursery people, they do have damage, but you try and hunt in that area, and you cannot hunt. This whole unit, you know, 6 months, people's been hunting these deer. And a lot of people out there are tired of the hunters bothering them. We need to take a long look at that. The people that's got the problem, let's give them kill permits. But let's don't take a whole area and keep it open for 6 months. You've heard the problem about the cougar. You know, a good, healthy cougar can kill 20, 25 deer a year, easy. One a week, some of them say. A good, healthy doe, you know, and in 5 years between her and her offspring, you might have a total of 15 deer. Well, if a cougar can kill 20 to 25 deer, we're up in the hundreds of mule deer that never hit the ground because of a cougar. Some people say there's not that many cougar, but I say we haven't got enough deer to feed them cougar. The elk, I wish some people from Elgin, LeGrand, would have been here. The people that live over there will tell you, they know where these elk herds are. They watch them. They take care of them. 20 cows, you'll see, hopefully you see more than 10 calves, but 10 would be a good number. 2 weeks later, there's six. A month later, there's four. You're lucky by summer if there's two calves running with those 20 cows. Another thing the state has to look at real serious, you've...
Bill, will you try and wrap it up for me?
Okay. We need to stop this poaching. We need to keep our troopers in the field. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Ed May, Mike Carey, Peter Schmidt. On deck, Kenneth Good, Kevin Carlson, Erica Keppel. Ed, Mike, or Peter? Are you Ed?
I'm Ed.
Ed, okay. Go ahead and get started, and they'll join you here in a moment, I think.
Chairman Clem and the council, I'm pleased to represent Ducks Unlimited. I'm the state chairman, which is a volunteer position. Ducks Unlimited is a conservation organization dedicated to developing, preserving, and maintaining wetlands. I can tell you that we make
your
up
name,
about 10...
Your name, too,
Edward
just
May.
For the record. Edward May. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
I can tell you that we represent about 10,000 volunteer members in Oregon, 1,000 active volunteers, 43 chapters, average 102 wetland projects in Oregon a year, and since 2000, that represents about $24 million in Oregon that's been spent here. Besides the obvious ducks and geese that supports dozens and dozens of species of wildlife that have to have wetlands to survive. We're pleased to be here tonight. The vast bulk of our membership are hunters. As hunting numbers decline, we also face revenue shortages, and it affects our ability to develop wetlands in Oregon. As I said, the vast bulk of our chapters and the vast bulk of our members are duck hunters, basically. So it's a great concern to us. Personally, why do I think the numbers are declining? It's hunting access and young people not having the opportunity or the exposure to either fishing, hunting, or anything in the outdoors. I support many of the programs the state's working on right now to help alleviate that access issue. However, I will tell you there's one other thing that's affected by the decline in hunting revenues. My real job is I'm a truant officer. And can I tell you the decline in hunters and fishermen is job security for me. Because it's rare for me to run into a kid that has a truancy issue that hunts and fishes. Just an observation. Thank you.
My name is Mike Carey. I'm a passionate waterfowler. I spent 32 years in the education system. Part of what I did in my teaching is I taught a program called Outdoor Education. Did that for 22 years. Two of the components that I taught was a program called riflery and another one that was called archery. After about 18 years, it seemed it wasn't politically correct to have that available to kids anymore, and it went away. I live in the Shoals area, which is south of Hillsboro. We have a tremendous metropolitan area on the west side of the river, being Beaverton, Hillsboro, Forest Grove, Gaston Banks, and the Washington County area. Concern that I have is we have the Tualatin drainage, which is a tremendous waterfowl area, which is being purchased by Metro. When they purchase a piece of property, it is not hunted anymore. It is closed to all hunting. Obviously, we have a whole lot of area that used to be huntable that is not huntable anymore. We have a federal refuge, Tualatin Refuge, that, as I understand, has a hunting component in it. It has been stated that it will never be hunted. We have a proposed federal refuge that is coming in the the Gaston area. Went to a hearing at that point in time, and amongst the things that were discussed, is there or will there be hunting? Yes, the hunting component is there. They indicated it would probably be researched, and research means small environmental groups tying this up. It probably, again, will not be hunted. I guess my concern concern is I'm feeling that at this point in time, it really isn't politically correct to be hunting in the Washington County area anymore. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you very much for holding this hearing this evening and giving us a chance to talk. I'm a wildlife biologist by profession. Oh, excuse me. My name is Peter Schmidt, and I'm from Sherwood, Oregon. I'm a wildlife biologist by profession, but I come to you today as a hunter who's been out in the field for over four decades. I've always enjoyed the opportunities that Oregon has given me to hunt, and I still appreciate those. We've heard many good suggestions from a lot of folks out there, and all of those are very valid suggestions, and I hope that you take each and every one of those seriously. The critical message I want to convey this evening is simply that wildlife require habitat, plain and simple. If you have no habitat, there will be no wildlife. If there's no wildlife, there will be no hunting. So I think we need to get back to basics. If there's no hunting, we've heard so much about this time-honored tradition among family and friends, and I think, as Mr. May pointed out here, that these are things that are a basic part of our being, especially here in Oregon. To get back to the habitat issue, you won't find deer and elk foraging in a shopping mall. You won't find pheasants and ducks thriving in a parking lot. We continue to invade and destroy habitat. I'm not suggesting that we can stop that, but what I am asking you is to take very serious consideration when matters of habitat come before you. Hunters have always been the foremost stewards of wildlife and their habitat in terms of both funding and volunteer time. We've heard that a number of times this evening. We will continue to do so. I encourage you to continue to support habitat acquisition and enhancement in any form possible, and to consider seriously any program or project that tends otherwise. Help us to keep the skies filled with birds, and help us keep the lands filled with the same variety of animals that Lewis and Clark witnessed on their epic journey in our area, so that we and our families and our children can continue to do so. Thank you again for holding this hearing and for listening to us and hearing what we have to say. Good evening.
Thank you.
Peter, I just want to double-check. We've got a phone number for you. If this committee would like more of your opinions and services, may we call on you in the future on this habitat issue?
Absolutely. Okay,
thanks. Thank you, gentlemen. So, Kenneth, good. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I skipped over Daryl Prater, so we'll put him in the next group on deck. So this is probably Kenneth, Kevin, and Erica.
Yep.
Great. Then next on deck, Daryl Prater, John Nagy or Nagy, and Larry Jones. While we're in transition, I'll note I grew up hunting pigeons when I grew up in Coos Bay, but when I got elected to the legislature, Representative Kevin Cameron from South Salem took me duck hunting for the first time. I'd never been duck hunting. And he and I both shot at one. So one of us killed one. His dog got two. And then, as typical. And then we fed it to the other legislators in a soup in the House lounge, actually, last year.
Last year.
That was great.
A lot of people got sick.
It was the ones the dog got. Yeah. So well, let's just get started. Are you Kenneth or Kevin? Kevin. So if Kenneth Good isn't around, then why don't I get Daryl Prater to join us? And if Kenneth is, we'll move him up.
Thank you. Should I start?
Yes, please.
Well, thank you once again, committee and chairman. I am a coach with YHEC, and yes, I have a passion for hunting, and I also have a passion.
Your full name? For
Kevin Carlson.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have a passion for hunting, and I also have a passion working with kids and getting kids started hunting. And I was taught to shoot by my father, but we were not a hunting family. But since then, I've gone on to become a hunter and enjoy hunting with my kids, with my niece. And I've also hunted with 15 of the other Y-Heck kids. It's been a pleasure to hunt with them, never worried about safety or anything else. But I am concerned, like many other people, about our numbers of wildlife. And I think that's evident even from what you guys have said. And I'm not a wildlife biologist. I'm not a rocket scientist. But I think some of the things that I'm aware of is with the cougars and the bear situation. And you said you'd like to see that returned back to. I'm not a person that hunts with dogs. In fact, I've had hunts ruined by dogs. But I am very much in favor of people hunting with dogs, whether it be cougars or bears. Baiting for bears is fine with me, too. Where we teach the kids, it's a textbook in Y-Heck. And one thing they say in there is most important feature to remember about habitat management is that no species is really managed by itself. And when you try to manage, or should I say, when ODFW has had their hands tied by the voters of Oregon, where they can't manage an animal or they can't manage a habitat because of the voters have made a decision, I think that's wrong. And I'd like to get back to where we see the biologists, you know, the game managers, actually who are professionals, take care of that rather than the voters. And anyway, I don't have too much more to say than that. Just thank you. I did give you one of these little brochures, and it shows 2 years ago our kids from the national champions, and then also my nieces on the back, and there's a quote from a kid out of Springfield, too. NRA does like our kids. We have won the Sportsmanship Award also. And but anyway, it is a great program. If anybody's got kids between the ages of 10 and 18, or actually 19 just in high school, so it's a great program. We'd like to see more groups around the state. It's just hard getting people to volunteer. There's plenty of kids that want to do it. It's just we need adults to help. I've got two, I don't know if anybody's interested. There are two picture slideshows. My niece did it 3 years ago, did an excellent job. We've used them kind of as a promotional thing. If any of you have kids that are be interested in it.
If you just leave them with us, that would be great.
I hope not.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Erica?
My name's Erica Kappel, and I come from a small town called Lieberg on the Mackenzie River. And my uncle's the one who got me started in hunting. I was about 12 years old when I started doing hunter safety. I went out many times hunting with him and my cousin, and I never got anything until just a couple years ago. I got my first buck when I was 18, and my uncle was with me. And it was pretty fun. I think he was kind of almost more excited than I was. I've been on lots of fun hunting trips with my cousins and had fun adventures exploring outside. And this last year, I was able to go on a special hunting trip for pheasant and chuckers with my Y-Heck team coach, Buck Buckner. And he actually, it was the first ever all-girls team we had, so that was pretty exciting. but we did chucker and pheasant hunting outside of Heppner, and it was a really fun bonding time with him, as well as my stepdad and my mom went along, too. So I think hunting is just really amazing to bond family together, and I've really enjoyed it. And I love the outdoors, and I love animals, and I'm going to school to become a wildlife biologist, so hopefully I can give some back what I've learned.
Thank you for coming down and joining us.
Thank you.
So I don't know if Daryl Prater is on their way up. John Nagy, Larry Jones, Jerry Ray. Yeah, not too many. We're three, maybe 10 more, three more panels. If I miss someone, we're about 10 more folks. If I miss someone, just let me know at that point. God.
Sometimes it reacts to a telephone, a cell phone.
My magnetic personality.
So who do we got here? Are you Larry?
I'm John Nagy.
Oh, you're John. Great. And who do we have here?
Jerry Ray.
Jerry, okay. How about, and Larry Jones?
Larry Jones.
Great, so after this, I'm looking at Ted Kistner, Norm Hewitt, and Don Schaller. Great, welcome. Please.
Welcome. Thank you very much, Chairman Clem. Thank you, everybody, for spending your time here. I know you spend a lot of time here. I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time here in the last couple of weeks, too. There's many things that are said.
One more time, full name for the record.
John Nagy.
Thank you.
Springfield, Oregon. That's Nagy. Okay. I belong to OHA. I'm the Habitat Committee Chairperson for our chapter there. I belong to Rocky Mountain Elk. I belong to two fishing organizations involved in habitat for both of those. I believe that, as the gentleman said a few minutes ago, that the commission for ODF&W, or let's say ODF&W, needs to be operated and ran by the people who study animals and know animals, and not by a group of people that have no idea what's going on out there, but by voting or by mandating, by however they feel, and granted they have feelings like we do, they don't understand what needs to be done out there. And I think we need to take the commission and balance it a little better than it is. I've dealt with the commission a lot of times and nice people, but it's kind of off balance, I think, a little bit to one side or the other. It's not a perfect balance. Like I said, ODF&W, they do a great job, but their hands are tied. And we can't continue to have habitat and to be running the roadblocks when we have volunteers lined up to do things, that we run into speed bumps or we run into dead ends because their hands are tied because of some political reason, which is not necessarily beneficial to wildlife, habitat, fish, whatever. One of the things I'd like to tell is a little story. I grew up in East L.A., not exactly a great little place to grow up. And by finding, being given, stealing Outdoor Life magazines, I was very involved in what it'd be like to live in someplace other than East L.A. My family never hunted, but as we grew up, we started hunting jackrabbits in Southern California. And my mother decided to take that up. And I left and came to Oregon with my family. A few years later, she retired and she followed and decided that she wanted to take up deer hunting at the age of 72. So we bought her a rifle and she practiced with it.
I'm not laughing.
And we went deer hunting. In 12 years, she killed 11 deer using 11 bullets.
Starting at 72?
Yeah.
Oh,
and when she was 76, her and I had walked 2.5 miles in 4 to 6 inches of snow up the McKenzie to a meadow, walked back, and a game officer stopped us, and he'd seen my pickup parked there. And he said, "Do both of you walk up there?" I said, "Yep." He came out and shook her hand. Says, "How old are you?" She's since passed on. I gave the rifle to a grandson who couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with it. His mother killed her one and only deer with that same rifle. This year, my youngest grandson called me while I was deer hunting and said, "Grandpa, got a deer in Idaho." I said, "Really? Who'd you get it with?" "Great grandma's rifle."
Aww.
"How many shots?" "One." And so these are kinds of things that are deep in my heart, the love for wildlife, the love for fish. I don't care if I ever kill another deer. I go hunting every year. Okay. And our youth need to be brought up with the respect of the outdoors. And I think that as I get older, I see the Native American people in a lot of ways had a lot better sense of their environment and their respect and responsibility to that. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Please.
Good evening, Chair and committee members. Thank you for having me. My name is Larry D. Jones, and I live in Marcola, Oregon. I'm a native Oregonian. I've been around about 67 years, a little plus, and I grew up with a full family, five brothers and two sisters, and our main meat source was venison and some black bear now and then. And in 2005, I had bypass surgery, and so it's still an important meat source because of the unsaturated fats and omega-3 fatty acids. And I've been bow hunting since 1961, and in the 70s, I was involved with the Oregon Bow Hunters as their vice president of bow hunting and many other things through the years. And have testified to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife on many fronts. In 1980, I developed the first elk call that sounded like an elk. And I've been blamed for ruining elk hunting, but which may be somewhat true. And in 1981, I started a business called Wilderness Sound Productions, which I left you a copy of one of our bow hunting videos or DVDs that you might enjoy. And I expanded that business to the producing calls that would call just about any animal in this North America. And we also had DVDs and CDs. And we sold those throughout the United States and Canada and a few in Europe and other countries. And I since have sold that business and now work for Bowhunter Magazine as a TV videographer, and which my role there is sometimes I get to be in front of the camera as well as behind it, which that's the part I like the most. I don't really agree with John. I still want to kill deer. I still have that desire. I'm sure some of you are the same way. And I still get it. Just as excited, or maybe more excited than I was when I was first doing it. I tell you this because although hunting is my passion and my livelihood, it's more than just shooting an animal for meat. You know, I care about the resource and its habitat, and I'm a life member of Rocky Mountain Owl Foundation and belong to OBH and OHA and on and on and on. In 1989, I started the Oregon Foundation for Black-Tailed Deer, and which is a non-profit organization, which I now still chair. And we've donated over $150,000 through those years to wildlife projects, and I'm not going to go through those. I'll give you some a page here you can read. And there's been a lot said tonight about family tradition, which I could go into, but it is a very important way of doing things together and teaching regard for our laws and our country and our wildlife and our nature. It's also an important way to instruct respect and safety for weapons. So I encourage us to continue that. I have wildlife concerns about the subjects that have been predation that's already been mentioned, and I'm not going to go through that. But I do know that we are in for some real problems with the wolves coming in. And I shouldn't say coming in, they're in Oregon, and they will grow. And there's been talk about the money that the hunters pay for the studies and management of wildlife. And I want to point out that hunters are one of the first people to step forward when there's a problem with wildlife, not enough of them, and say, no hunting. Yep. And so we are wildlife's best friend. So thank you very much for having me. I know I ran over, and sorry for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gary, where are you from?
Larry?
Where are you from?
I'm from Marcola, Oregon.
Oh, Marcola, okay. Great.
That's just outside of Springfield.
Oh, yeah, all my folks are from Crawford.
Actually, it's a little town called Mabel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's Mabel.
Good evening. My name's Jerry Ray, and I'm with the Mary's Peak Hound Club, and I am an Oregon hunter and fisherman. And I want to preface my testimony here and say that I support everything that's been said here tonight, but I need to look at the hunter's perspective towards the non-hunting community, and I hope you'll glean that from my attached testimony, which you have. Members of the House Agricultural, Natural Resources, and Rural Committee, Rural Communities Committee, I want to thank you for taking time to discuss hunting in Oregon. In an attempt to be brief and focus on one point concerning hunting, I would like to draw your attention to one wildlife area of 12 managed by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. This area is the E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area, located 10 miles north of Corvallis. E.E. Wilson is the old World War II military base called Camp Adair. It is about 1,700 acres of managed habitat, creeks, and ponds. The only things remaining from the camp are a few buildings used for offices and storage by ODF&W, and the skeletal remains of footings, foundations, and concrete slabs, which accommodated about 90,000 troops during its height of occupancy. Also, a very unique network of roads is still intact to this day. It is this unique system of roads that sets E.E. Wilson apart from other managed wildlife areas. These roads give easy access to disabled folks as well as all other Oregon citizens, such as hikers, bikers, berry pickers, bird watchers, fishermen, and hunters. About 50,000 user visits annually enjoy the facility, with only about 25% of these user visits being hunters and fishermen. As an ODF&W managed wildlife area, money and personnel are required to maintain and enhance it. Hunting activities take place only 6 months out of the year, but the area is open year-round to all the public. The only funding for this very special outdoor recreational area comes from hunting and fishing licenses and tag fees. No public tax dollars from the general fund are used to support the E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area. It is our pleasure as hunters and fishermen to share our funds with the general public. My point this evening is to inform you, the members of this committee, and the good citizens of Oregon that hunting can and does benefit the whole Oregon community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. John, I'll note I still hunt with my grandpa's 300 Savage. I'm the grandson that can't hit the broadside of the barn. Okay, so we got should have Ted Kistner, Norm Hewitt, Don Schaller. I'll put another effort out for Daryl Prater if Daryl's around, but I think I'm about third or fourth try for Daryl. So,
Mr. Chief, you are on target.
I'm trying. Thank you. So, Ted, Norm, and Don, Paul Askew, Adam Raymond, and Steve Garner on deck. We got three more after that. Dwayne Barnard, Steve Byerland, Carl Swartz. So if you're not one of them, and we lost a sign-up sheet, but that's what I've got. So
one more page.
Want the other page?
Is there another page? These jokers over here. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for your patience.
That's fine. I'm Don Schaller. I'm from Portland, but I live in East Washington County.
make that distinction. Thank you for allowing us to come and talk to each of you. And I was born in Wisconsin as well. I grew up with my Red Ryder BB gun in my hand as my constant companion. But I started to hunt in this state in 1963, and during that time, up to about the mid-80s, hunting was really good for deer and elk. But starting in the mid-80s, and then, of course, in 1994, when we had Measure 18 passed, things started to go into the toilet, and they've been continually going that direction. So with the advent of wildlife management by the ballot box, the ODF&W really hasn't been able to manage game. They're constantly looking over their shoulder to see what kind of lawsuit's coming next. Recently, Dr. Bruce Johnston of ODF&W completed a study in Wallawa County on the predation of elk. This was about a 5-year study, as I recall. The purpose of the study was to determine what, if any, effect cougars were having on survival rate of elk calves. And results of the study indicated that they were impacted in a very major way and generally did not survive their first year of life. They were collared, so that's how they were able to find them, of course. During the past 3 years, ODF&W has been removing cougars in half of the Heppner unit. I suppose many of you are familiar with that unit. But this is being done according to the Cougar Plan, and by the spring, they assume that they will have killed 52 cougars. And they are, at this time, noticing an increase in the survival rate of the elk calves and also in the deer as well. And a friend of mine lives adjacent to the area that is being hunted by ODF&W. And last year, he killed 6 cougars on his 1,500-acre tree farm. So with over 60 cougars killed in a relatively small area, this should give you some perspective of the number of cougars that are running around out there. Everyone in eastern Oregon has a cougar story. Okay. While predation is a major factor in reducing hunting opportunities, poor habitat is another factor. We've already talked tonight about the fact the U.S. Forest Service has not been cutting trees. And the state forest, while they are doing cutting in the Tillamook Burn, they really haven't paid a lot of attention to wildlife. Because as they make a clear cutting, they go in and they spray it, and then, of course, there's nothing there for anyone to eat. Recently, I am a director of OHA, I should say, and recently several of us have met with ODF&W and Oregon Department of Forestry to talk about the Tillamook Burn. And the fact that, that they are not allowing for forage, so we're in the process right now. We know we're not going to turn it back to the old Tillamook Burn, but we are going to try to help them recognize that they got to clear some areas and don't spray it. Plant some forage in the area where there'll be something for the deer and the elk to eat rather than the nipping off the tops of the trees. And that's, of course, is what they're concerned about. Their mission is to grow, the Forestry Department's mission is to grow trees. And so we're hoping to prove to them if they provide forage on the ground, the elk in particular will leave the tree tops alone and they'll get their trees and we'll get deer and elk.
I'm told they like roses.
Yes, excellent testimony. This committee is actually going to be considering some bills about the Tillamook Forest, so we'll also include your thinking on that at that time.
So anyway, that's what we're going to hope to accomplish. We got another meeting with them early in March, and at that time I think they're going to lay out all kinds of research projects where they're going to want some of our money, which is okay. We're willing to help. I guess in the interest of time here, I'll stop at this point in time, but hopefully you'll, as bills come up that in front of you, which are going to be anti-hunting, I hope you'll pass on them. Thank you very much.
Term's dead on arrival.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Don.
Say it too loud.
Chair Klim, committee members, my name's Norm Hewitt. I live in Amity. I'm here tonight representing the National Wild Turkey Federation to let you know that we're dedicated to the conservation of the wild turkey and the preservation of our hunting heritage. We also have several outreach programs, which the JAKES program, our junior program, JAKES standing for Juniors Acquiring Knowledge, Ethics, and Sportsmanship. the Women in the Outdoor Program, and the Wheeland Sportsman Program that are dedicated to informing, educating, and involving women, children, and physically challenged people in wildlife conservation and the wise stewardship of our natural resources. Since 1985, over $300,000 has been spent by Oregon chapters on conservation and restoration efforts throughout the state through programs such as Operation Big Sky, Guzzlers for Gobblers, Wild Turkey Woodlands, and the State Superfund. Along with our other conservation partners, over 175,000 acres have been positively affected through riparian restoration, guzzler development, aspen regeneration efforts, and prescribed burns. Turkey hunting is a growth segment in this state with a substantial economic impact. Turkey hunters spend over $10 million a year at the state and local level for food, lodging, fuel, and gear. Tag revenues continue to climb due to an increase in tag sales and tag fee increases, which the NWTF endorsed and which has helped to offset declining deer and elk tag sales. The NWTF is also committed to the scientific management of the wild turkey by providing a regional biologist to assist western states with scientific studies, research, and information to aid in managing this valuable resource. We must continue to effectively manage our wild turkey populations to increase viewing and hunting opportunities, to minimize damage and depredation issues, and maximize the economic benefit to the state of Oregon. The National Wild Turkey Federation supports that effort through the state of Oregon. On a personal note, I wasn't raised as a hunter. My mom fished. My dad didn't do any of it. He was a sportscaster, and he wasn't an outdoorsman or a sportsman. He was an athlete. And not that the two don't mix, but I was introduced to hunting through friends who, because I was a fisherman, I liked to fall Chinook fish on the coastal streams, and it always kind of overlapped with hunting seasons, and it was always a challenge to get away on hunting camp. But I was introduced to the sport, and I've been hooked ever since. It's a valuable resource. It's a revenue builder for the state. There's a lot of economic impact in all the segments of the sport. It's not just wild turkey. And we find that most of the habitat projects that we get involved with aid all of the animals, not just the wild turkeys. When you do a project that aids in the upland game bird arena, you're going to help the deer and the elk and all the other critters as well. So,
thank you for coming down.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Ted Kistner, an avid hunter for both big and small game. And I got a bad habit of fishing, too. Professionally, I'm a veterinarian. I have worked as a wildlife veterinarian in 13 southeastern states and contract veterinarian for Department of Fish and Wildlife for about 20 years. Mention was made about the hair loss syndrome. Excuse me. To me, it is a matter of nutrition. When animals are on top nutrition, they develop good immunity against external parasites. The louse, biting louse, is considered to be the cause of the hair loss syndrome. When animals lose immunity or nutrition declines, they lose immunity, and it seems like external parasites are one of the first to which they lose this immunity. So nutrition is... Optimum nutrition, high nutrition, is essential for proper maintenance of good wildlife populations, whether it be game or non-game animals and birds. The other thing that fits right into this is the retired wildlife biologist from Willamette Unit urging you to encourage timber cutting. The first 5 years after timber cutting, regeneration, optimum nutrition in that young growth. Thereafter, it declines. Closed canopy, we're wasting our time trying to produce wildlife. Those are the two things that I'd like to address and comment on, and appreciate all the time you've spent In closing, I intend to hunt and fish as long as I can, physically and mentally. Granted, there are some people around that consider that I'm already mentally disturbed, but I ignore them and continue on. Well, thank you very much.
For you hear what they say about us.
You'd be qualified to be a legislator.
Hang on.
With all those guys on the
Thanks
right.
Thanks again. Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. Paul Askew, Adam Raymond, Steve Garner. After that, Dwayne Bernard, Steve Byerlin, Carl Swartz.
50 minutes.
Was that right? Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, we're down to, I think, the remaining four or five.
Okay.
I did get a half-hour break for lunch.
There you go. Welcome. Why don't you start?
Chairman Clem and committee, thank you for coming out here and listening to us tonight. And I'd really like to thank everyone else that's come up here and spoken. They've pretty much been coming up here from one of being the last ones. Everyone's pretty much covered what I wanted to say, so I'm going to be really short so everyone can go home. My name is Adam Raymond, and I'm from Albany. I'm currently beginning my senior year at Oregon State University in the Fish and Wildlife Department.
Right. Sorry. I've done volunteer
work with ODF&W, and I've had seasonal jobs just recently getting done doing wolf surveys living out of a tent all over northeast Oregon this summer. Mm-hmm. And just a couple things that I'd like to cover is going back with the mountain lions, just some things to maybe think about is I've heard back in 1994, just before the dogs were banned, that the amount of complaints on livestock and human encounters was incredibly low, or like around 25 a year. And then as recently as 2006, that number of complaints with livestock and human encounters is up to over 300 a year. And just how much money and work hours are lost because of these complaints. And so maybe other things to maybe think about, hunting pressure and just human pressure in general on our wildlife. There's all kinds of things that are not just predators, but there's just a whole, this is just a real complex issue. And maybe the possibility of looking into, I've not put that much thought, I've not really talked to many people about this, but with rifle hunters, like archery hunters, we're able to hunt deer and elk at the same time. Maybe combining the deer and elk season during rifle season would limit the amount of hunting season and pressure on animals throughout the year, or maybe even possibly limiting the time of year when people are able to go out and look for sheds, since deer and elk shed their antlers every year. This could also help ease pressure off during the winter months off of our game animals. Maybe proposing bills, which I think this may have been brought up, about taxing birdseed. So we have people that are still enjoying wildlife but are not donating.
It's out there. What?
He signed on today, so let me
know. Oh, he signed on? All right. That sounds good. Okay, how about also maybe adding on to on our tax, for maybe people during their tax returns, if they want to donate to non-game or habitat issues with the state of Oregon. Also, we have the salmon plates. Maybe we could look at into getting wildlife plates.
What do you say?
She's the chair of the plate.
Oh, she's the chair of the license plate committee.
Well, there we go.
I don't like license plates.
I was waiting if she was going to say how she feels about them.
You have to sort of stand in line. There are a number behind you.
Oh, great.
Got my own plate.
We take all ideas here.
Yes, we do.
That's right. That's right. We just don't always do them all.
Exactly.
But we,
tell you what we do with
that.
All of those ideas.
Yeah.
So
there's strength in numbers. Everyone with a plate idea, we're all going to march on around the same day.
Nine now, huh?
I didn't turn mine in this year.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, get control.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What's up, please, give me, no.
Please.
And the only other thing is, just going back to some people said they about the research, looking at other states, how they manage their wildlife, and it's not that easy. I think ODF&W does the best job that they can do. They're doing great. We can look at every state. We can look at research projects in our own state, and what those research projects find are not necessarily going to work in every area. And so, but I just really, really like to thank ODFNW for everything that they have done. So, thank you.
Well, thanks for coming, Adam.
Thank you.
You bet. Sir?
Chair Clem, members
Beaver,
of the
what
committee.
What do you expect? It's fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you for...
I was going to say, wearing green, though.
Yeah, what?
I appreciate it.
It's obviously getting late, and we're getting silly.
All right.
I've got this down to about 3 minutes, so
nice.
I'll move as quick as I can. I'm a native Oregonian. My name is Paul Askew. I reside at 13297 Fortuna Court, Oregon City, Oregon. Hunting for me is not just a hobby that I do a couple weekends a year, but rather a year-round lifestyle. I've been hunting in Oregon my entire adult life, so just over 20 years. I recently got my stepson, Robert Haynes, involved about 5 years ago when he was nine. This lifestyle provides us year-round activity. When there are no hunting seasons open, my stepson and I do various outdoor activities associated with hunters' conservation groups. We belong to several, which include habitat restoration projects, roadside litter cleanup, and filling water guzzlers for wildlife during summer in high desert regions where water is scarce. As deer and archery elk hunters, we have to keep our skills honed, which means year-round target practice. We enjoy 3D trail shoots at least twice a month between the months of January and August. These trail shoots entail walking 2 to 3 mile courses and shooting at life-size foam animal targets in a variety of terrain and landscapes. This is a great outdoor activity and healthy alternative to an otherwise unhealthy society. Where some sports or activities can only be played by the most physically capable, hunting is for everybody. Hunting knows no boundaries. Hunting is a hobby that can be enjoyed by everyone, whether you are a man, woman, or child, any race, creed, or color. Hunting and related activities are healthy, provide an organic food source, and is something you can enjoy from a young age until you are very old, as you've witnessed this evening. Although I love to hunt in Oregon, I spend a fair share of my time and money in our great state. I have been a bit discouraged with our Oregon's deer and elk herds in recent years. Based on ODFW's scientific studies, it appears predators, namely cougars, are having a significant impact on our declining deer and elk herds, which is why I've made the decision to look to other states for opportunities in previous years and in the future. I use all of my vacation time to hunt, and although I would like to spend my money and my vacations in Oregon, other states like Utah, Nevada, Colorado, and Wyoming have all brought their mule deer numbers up by implementing habitat restoration projects and aggressive predator management strategies. These states continue to meet mule deer management objectives in most regions of their respective state, which is something that Oregon lacks. This means I am now hunting in states other than my own to provide better opportunity for my stepson and myself. It would be nice to see Oregon follow suit of these other western states so we can spend our time and money closer to home. I appreciate you taking the time to sit here through everyone. This is a wonderful opportunity for us. And I just got to say one more thing. Hunters pay taxes. Cougars don't. Thank you.
I will just note before you start that my committee has been free to leave at any point. They're not required under our rules, and they're all here.
except for Snowball over here.
Mr. Chair, there's two of us that were here between 5:30 and 6 this morning.
That's
we
true.
This
and it's a testament to how beneficial for us this has been, because typically in evening meetings, somebody's got to get home to their family, and it's not because they're required to be. It's because we want to be. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Steve Garner, and I'm here because I'm really concerned about what's going on with our numbers. And basically, in a nutshell, before Measure 18, we didn't have these problems. We didn't have them. We had a slight problem with overpopulation of hunters. That's why we had to go to a draw system. 1992, we had a major winter over in Eastern Oregon that killed 60% of our deer herds in places. After that, in 94, we had Measure 18. And it hasn't been until really the last 6 or 7 years that I've noticed a big change in populations. mainly the cow-to-calf ratios. I've got statistics here from just about every unit in Eastern Oregon, date clear back to 1953 in some units and 74 in a lot of others. And we went from averaging somewhere around 51% for about a 40-year period. And in the last 6 or 7 years, we've got units that are down around 11 to 23%. I haven't finished my study yet to figure out exactly what these statistics are for each unit and everything. But that's, in a nutshell, we're in a downward spiral. And if we don't come out of this downward spiral, we're not going to have any hunting. We're not going to have, I've heard that we're going to lose like 18 law enforcement state troopers.
42.
That's 42. That's a staggering number. And we can't afford that right now. A lot of our folks that are going 4 to 6 years without drawing a tag to hunt are most likely going out and taking it upon themselves and writing themselves a tag on a napkin and doing what they want to do. I've been hunting in the state for 30 years, and I'm a timber cruiser by trade. I work in Alaska, Washington, Oregon, California, Idaho, and I think we really need to pay attention to what's going on there with our wolf populations. We've got them here in Oregon. I saw one 7 years ago over in the desolation unit. They're here, and they're here to stay. They're not going to go away unless we
help them.
Well, I don't necessarily want to make them go away. I want to see them managed on a certain level. I want to see our cats managed on a certain level. We've just totally undermined our Fish and Wildlife Department that is, in my opinion, has worked almost flawlessly for the last 60, 70 years. You talk to a lot of our older hunters that are 80, 90 years old. You know, the late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s, our mule deer populations were as good as any other state. And now they're just a mere shadow of what we used to have. Just to give you an idea, this is some statistics on the desolation unit alone.
Yeah, just one, sorry, question I'm trying to picture. Is that, like, in between Baker and Unity, is that desolation?
Yeah.
Yeah, Early Mountain in the middle.
Well, that's between Baker and Unity, that's Sumter, Beale unit.
Oh, Sumter. So, yeah, Beale and
desolation is west of the Sumter unit.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
And just to give you an idea, this is just one unit, and there's others that our cow-to-calf ratios are even worse. But in the last 6 or 7 years, our cow-to-calf ratios have gone between 40 and 60% down to 21%. And there's some neighboring units that are down at 11 to 15%. In the desolation unit for almost a 20-year period, we were averaging rifle harvests that were in just around 1,000 elk harvested every year. Cow tags, there was as many, I believe one year we had 1,800 or 1,850 cow tags issued. This year there's none. Our harvests that went from 1,000 or 1,100 in that unit alone, the last 2 years have been 230 and 240 elk taken. So we're harvesting one quarter of what we used to harvest for a long period of time. And it's going to continue to get nothing but worse. Wolves will be the nail in the coffin. We'll be done. And that's exactly what I'm seeing in other states that I work in. I'm stepping over them all the time. You know, it's quite obvious when you find a cougar kill. There'll be claw marks underneath the jaw. The nose will often be bitten. There'll be puncture marks in the back of the head. I'm stepping them over them all the time. It's just a common thing. And I don't want to see these animals demolished. That's not healthy for our environment either.
Managed,
people that want
managed
to see
like
animals.
Everything else. Just managed like everything else.
They need to be managed like everything else. And that's why we have a Fish and Wildlife Department. They're great people. They're very smart. And they can do everything to make everybody happy as far as wildlife concerns.
Yeah, with baiting and bears.
That's about all I have. I could go on for hours with
stuff, but...
Thank you very much. It's very important testimony. Thank you all for coming down.
Thank you.
So, I've got Dwayne Bernard, Carl Swartz, and I don't have anybody else. If there's somebody else here in the other room, come in and wave your arms, because I got two left. All right, well... Now, hold on, Ted Kistner. I know you've already went once. Oh, are you leaving? All right.
All right.
Good night, sir. Our pleasure. We're not going to talk about your jacket at all.
Oh. I think it's a wonderful jacket.
Yeah. So are you Dwayne or Carl?
I'm Carl.
Okay, do we lose Dwayne?
Dwayne Bernard was up earlier.
Oh, great. Carl, you're it. Last but not least.
Thank you. And it's really nice to have you wearing your jacket.
Would you like to summarize everything we've heard?
Doc. Thank you, Representative Clem and all the rest of you.
Trojan.
I really appreciate that you would give us this time and give us an evening of your life. I know you're busy and underpaid. And,
Amen.
You got a lot of things to do, like the rest of us. I looked at my notes.
I need a full name.
Carl Swartz.
Thanks, Carl.
And I'm with Oregon Bowhunters. I'm not officially representing them tonight, but I don't think I'm going to say anything that conflicts with where our positions are. If you would like to look at two internet websites, I would like you to write these down. If you want to, saveourelk.com. Have any of you ever been there to that one? This is just laymen that took pictures of what wolves do to elk. And it's done in a number of the states that have been talked to tonight, and it's really ugly. You won't want to even look at it, but I wish all of you would write it down and take a look at it. And the other one, I don't know if you've all been there or not, but odfnl.org, I believe it is, O-R-G, your own department. I have had the opportunity to talk to the department, members of the department. I'm on the Sportsman's Leadership Group, and we meet every other month for sure, and sometimes we spend another month in between the two that are normal. And our department, despite the fact that there are things that we hunters do not agree with, or we wish that would be changed, and with the legislature and also with the department. If you go to that website, you'll find out what they're doing. And in all the years that I've been here, and I've been a very active hunter, I think this is probably the most active group we've ever had for trying to start right at the bottom and get youth involved and get ladies involved, women involved. I recently took my little grandson down to E.E. Wilson, and Mark, and I can't think of his last name right now, who's in charge of the rabbit hunts down there. Not only did he supply shotgun shells and take them, everyone out and have them shoot some clay pigeons that were still on the ground to see if they could handle the shotgun and so on, gave us non-toxic shells. He also wrote thank you notes to us for coming down there, provided a lunch for a very nominal fee. It was a great experience. We didn't get any rabbits, but we did have a really good time. I've been a long-time hunter. I came from Pennsylvania. I moved to Oregon probably as much for the hunting as anything else. There weren't very many deer in Pennsylvania, and there were lots of them in Oregon. You could hunt all over the state. And at that time, if you saw a deer in Pennsylvania, you called everybody that you could think of that was a hunter. And now, since then, there's been limits of as many as six a year in Oregon, and you have to hunt by draw in many of the areas in Oregon. So it's really changed. And there is no doubt in my mind that it's largely predators. And even the habitat, which sometimes is blamed, is not the big issue, except in the forest country where there isn't logging taking place and there isn't browse for the deer. They don't do well at all in a canopy. If you ever walk through a big canopy, there's nothing there for them to eat. They can't eat the bark off the fir trees. And sometimes that goes on and on and on. The mule deer problem, if you were to look at that in the Round Bend, and around the little areas that have irrigation, Christmas Valley and so on, where there's hay fields, that's where the deer are. In around Bend, where you can't hunt them because everybody likes the deer and doesn't want to shoot them, I've seen pictures with as many as 13 bucks big bucks, most of them, in a hay field just right outside of Bend. They do real well around town. Roads are hard on them. But it isn't so much, it isn't nearly as much the blacktop as it is in the areas I love to hunt in the Steens. I've taken a couple bucks with a bow and arrow in the Steens. And there they're gone because there's cougar there, and there's lots of them. And there's no protection. The cougar are still reticent to come around the areas around the cities. There are some, but there's not as many. And they like it when there's no hunting signs, and there's big pasture lands and alfalfa and land that is kind of between land where there's forest or sage, and then there's also farmland. They do pretty well there. I'm going to keep it really brief, but in that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, you'll see that our commission has 24 or 25 area meetings they did last year so that they could get different sports groups and different communities involved, which I think is phenomenal, and they have about the same number of people that advise them, and I think that's a really good thing. And I had four notes that I just wanted to say, and I'll make it really short, and I know I'm the one that you were looking for, the last one, you can go that's home right. And very stoically. Anyway, let those that know and spend their lives dedicated make the hunting and fishing decisions. I mean, really make an effort to do that. That's something that I would ask you to take with you. Let the people that know what they're doing, and that would include people that are in the field, and like Paul Askew, I know him. He spends his life. That's his life. If he would be a religious person, he would put Billy Graham to shame. Okay, maybe not quite that bad. Another one. Promote choices and privileges rather than restrict them. Our government it just seems to be so restrictive, and if there's things that people can get somebody else not to do or take privileges away, it seems like that's what's happening. It happens with a lot of times with gun control, and people that really have grown up with guns aren't the danger. People that have carry permits are not the danger. Statistically, they're just not. They aren't. But it's people that aren't familiar with them. And pay attention to the predator problem. That's really huge in Oregon. And again, the statistics are somewhere around 6,000 cougars in Oregon, and eating an elk or a deer a week, that would be 50 times 6,000 is 300,000 animals. About 50,000-60,000 deer and elk are taken by hunters. So the cougars don't buy tags, and they don't go into certain units where they're supposed to. They take whatever they want. And if you can, include hunters in the legislative process. There's some really good people here. You guys, maybe you know some of them, but Larry Jones didn't tell you that he's hunted all his life and he's been on TV all the time. I mean, we see him in lots of shows, and there's a lot of others that have been too. But if we would see the gain that's been taken by these guys or the hours spent, it's horrendous. I mean, there's some really great people here that have done an awful lot of hunting. Cameron Haynes, I've seen him all over this American continent on TV, and some of you probably know that too. And it was good to see those people testify. And thanks again so much for your time, and I'm glad that you gave it to us.
Mr. Chair, you shouldn't have made the duck go last. He's a pretty smart fella.
No.
I just would like for the record to state that the problem in my neighborhood is kitty-eating coyotes.
Coyotes, yeah.
No, the cougars will take care of some of them.
Well, we don't have any cougars yet, but
my coyotes. Cousin from Near Odell shot two last week. Two coyotes. His property, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it.
They're stalking the dogs. And
they're
the
out there at night.
Yeah.
And
I was on the water.
One night
so, committee members, thank you for your time and attention. And those who came, it's clear that the state of our sport is strong. We have some work to do, but you answered the call to come here and talk about it in a way that was beyond my wildest expectations. So thank you very much.
Yes.
I'm going to close the committee.
Thank you all.
Did you say wildest?